Hello, everybody, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap. It is April the 26th of 2017, and this mysterious other Pennsylvanian has replaced Chris. Don't freak out.
Yeah. Hi, I'm teching. I'll be your guest host for this podcast.
Are you representing NBC? What was that?
I just got done doing an internship at a news station, so if that's the way you want to go Walter Cronkite with this, I could totally do that.
That might be a little bit weird for 2 hours, but...
And in this chapter of My Hero Academia, the local drug ring... Actually, that actually could sync up rather well.
That should be... Works out pretty well.
Yeah.
Rolo T, as in case you missed it, because he has been tweeting all about it the past week or so, Rolo T, Chris is in Spain. He's on vacation. He's not going to be joining me for this one. But it's okay. We've got Teching 101 here. Award-winning YouTuber... who's going to be talking manga with me this week. How you been, man? I think it's been since what, Bleach ended, I think, that we last got to talk with you?
Yeah, I think it was the last one. It was either the competition we had, the quiz, or
I think that's it.
I think there was a video I did either after that with this. But it's been about 8 months since I've been on, so thanks for having me again. Was that your first thought when it came to a guest host, or was there like a list of people?
No, it was pretty much you.
Yeah, I was thinking about like how, okay, I kind of want to be on the show again, but I just don't want to like send like, hey, I want to come on again, please let me back on. So it's always awkward, so I think I just let them if they feel like it, you know.
No problems, man.
It synced up about right, so yeah, it's all good. Yeah.
So we have a fair amount of manga to talk about this week. You read, you read Hajime no Ippo, right? Like, you know that's like our recommendation we're doing, right? The nearly 1100 chapter boxing manga. You have read that.
You know
that,
what?
Right?
Yeah. Honestly, I've read occasionally, you know, when I'm bored and I've read everything else and I'm not doing anything, I'll read a chapter or so of that. It has guys with kickboxing, right? Yeah, sure. Totally. No. Yeah.
Almost.
Almost. Damn it. I was close.
But no, we're just going to do our usual recap stuff. I think we've got 9 series to talk about this week. So
yes.
I think that we're just going to jump into it. And you already like read most of these anyway. So
I actually do. And because of you gave me the list and I went ahead and I read Dr. Stone and We Never Learn, because they're relatively short. they're new. They're actually really good. I was actually really enjoying myself with them. We'll get to that. The only ones that I'm... So we're like 90% there. The only ones I'm not caught up on are Food Wars and Seven Deadly Sins, despite the pleas from all my fans that keep telling me to read Seven Deadly Sins. So
I can totally see that. It's a pretty intense series, but...
okay.
But we're going to do our usual run through, our usual order, which I'm not really sure how I ended up coming up with this order, actually. Literally just one time... This one time I was like, well, we're not going to do... We don't have World Trigger to put at the end anymore. And and we didn't want to end on, like, I think it was Toriko, I think, at the time. And so
I was like, to ask you about that. Did World Trigger end, or did it get canceled
It's on hiatus.
Hiatus hell, okay.
Ashihara has been sick, and I think that he's at the point where he's almost recovered, but they're kind of, I guess, waiting for the right opportunity for him to come back. I don't know.
Okay. Well,
fingers crossed on that.
Yeah, fingers crossed on that series I don't read, but maybe I'll get into it. Actually, I love getting into series on hiatus, because then I can just, like, oh,
you
not worry
catch
about
up,
it.
Yeah.
Getting it. Yeah, yeah, it's what I did with Hunter x Hunter. Yeah.
And then you did it again.
Yeah, and exactly. Again. And again, and again, and again.
It's going to come back again for a month. But yeah, let's do My Hero Academia starting things off.
Let's jump into it here.
So, last time, all of the interning students were called into a meeting by Sir Nighteye, who brought together all three of the hero organizations to discuss the A Prefix of Death. And the entire chapter is basically about this meeting, which... There's a surprising amount of looking down on people in this.
I mean, it's mostly like the few of the heroes that aren't that well acquainted with the UA students, and they're just like, these damn kids being here, what are they doing here?
They're just holding us back. They don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah,
we have to explain things to them in this discussion.
Yeah,
we have to talk with these people in this talk.
Yeah, you mean to tell me that in this meeting where we discuss the eight prefects of death, we actually have to explain what the eight prefects of death are doing? Come on now.
I've got, I don't know, what the hell else does he have to do anyway? It's like,
and of course it's a hero that we've never seen before.
Exactly.
So he's just immediately now the asshole hero.
Just carrying over the rich people from Black Clover to fill this role, basically.
Oh god, yes, yes, yes.
How can a peasant be a hero?
Oh man. Yeah, but it's a very dialogue heavy centric chapter there.
Yeah, we do get introduced to some pretty interesting looking characters, though. Like, I really like the Night Eye Agency psychic that we're introduced to, Centipeder.
Yeah, no, yeah, yeah, yeah. Who is he's one of their what's it called? One of their branch offices sidekick. He's not, I don't think he's like an office like direct sidekick, because that's like just Bubble Girl
right.
and Mirio. But this guy, I guess, was designed by a fan who won this contest, and
it's a cool design. I mean, you know, just this guy in a suit, but then there's a freaking centipede coming out of his neck. It's so great.
I can't tell if his head is a centipede and it's just like a normal head that he has the thing, or it's like he's using it as like a scarf. It's a cool design, yeah.
And I have to kind of wonder, is the hero, like, is this all his body, or is he like possessing a human body or that he was provided, or?
Oh, that's kind of that he was provided, or that he just like
hijacked. Or like, you know, or, you know. Well, that, or, you know, maybe, like, you know, he was, like, donated a cadaver, or maybe it's an artificial body. Or maybe he just has a centipede, giant centipede growing out of his neck.
Like, I wonder if how he attacks. Does he just, like, stretch out his neck and it's, like, connected to his body? Or if he just, like, leaves the actual body and it becomes the centipede and just attacks people that way?
Yeah.
I don't know.
So, there's a bunch of dialogue that does establish a bunch of stuff that we already know. Oh, we're investigating this group. They've made contact with the League of Villains twice. They actually have video of twice leading Overhaul into the meeting and stuff like that.
Yes. We find out about part reminded me of Hunter x Hunter. We find out about the Hero Network, which is like the internet website, you know, Skype thing that's exclusively just for heroes, and that's how they like communicate and everything.
It's kind of weird, honestly. We have our own private internet system.
Well, I don't know, but that's just how it goes, I guess. I mean, I guess they have to have a way to communicating with each other, because, you know, they're kind of like heroes. They can't just put that stuff out there.
Random hero that is not familiar with the students is like, what are those UA kids doing here? And Fat Gum sticks up on their behalf. He, like, just springs out of his chair, and you actually see it flying backwards.
I love Fat Gum.
He's great. He's such a really cool guy, honestly. Yeah.
And he gives out candy in this chapter. It's great.
Yeah, because he's like, I actually don't know all of you students, but I'm not Fat Gum. It's nice to meet you. And immediately Suyu and Uraraka is like, he's so round and cute. Ah, have candy!
But then he immediately crushes it.
Well, he has to make a point. It's like,
he has
to
make the point, yeah. He's like, I'm adorable, but this means serious business here. I will not stand for this.
It's a drug that destroys quirks. Oh, I crushed the candy.
Damn it.
They establish that Tamaki, a.k.a. Sun Eater, was able to recover from the drug that disabled his quirk. And he's like, yeah, yeah, I'm back to normal now.
Makes a cow hoof.
Oh, look at this fabulous cow hoof.
You know, if nothing else, I love Tamaki's, like, quirk, because I looked at that and I'm like, okay, that's something that's just took so much creativity to get that I've never seen before, ever, that you can just eat something and then return to the animal of what that food came from. And that's very clever there.
Yeah, the shape-shifting thing itself is like, okay, you've seen that before, but...
Yes, the methodology of how that worked, yeah.
Weirds up something that's already familiar to you.
Yeah, yeah.
Aizawa talks about the drug as well, because he says, it's different from my erasure quirk. See, he explains it as, I am not attacking a person's quirk itself. What we call quirks are special additions to an ordinary body, or the plus alpha elements.
Everything is plus in this plus world we live in.
So he says, I temporarily stop those quirk factors from activating. I can't actually cause damage to them. We got Tamaki checked out at the hospital, and they said his quirk factors were damaged. Luckily, his body's natural healing was enough to fix the problem. So presumably, if enough of the drug is injected into somebody, it would cause permanent damage.
Yeah, I mean, I looked at it like a damage to, like, the nervous system, like, a little bit. It might be okay, but if you damage it enough, you're screwed. You won't be able to move it ever again.
Yeah. That sounds about right to me.
Yeah.
Nerve, exactly, like a superficial damage, your body will heal it, but yeah, it's if you get your arm ripped off, then you can't heal that, basically.
Yeah, or if you get hit in the spine or something. Yeah, I get you.
And also, Fat Gum says, you know, it's a bit difficult. We would have been in a bind because, see, the dirt actually dissolved, essentially, was destroyed because when it entered his body. And the gun was destroyed. But since one of the darts bounced off of Kirishima's body, we got our hands on on a vial of it. And Kirishima was like, I was useful!
Yes!
So Fat Gum says, and our analysis of it reveals something very disgusting. They found human cells and blood. So we had theorized before that, that little girl that Overhaul is with has all the bandages and stuff, maybe stuff is being taken out of her. It definitely seems as though stuff is going in that direction.
Which I'll admit, I'm not a good Sherlock because I didn't come to that conclusion right away. They basically had to wait to spell that out. so later on, that asshole hero is like, oh my god, do we have to spell it out to you? And I'm like, yes, please, could you, sir?
He just starts calling one of the students teching.
Oh my god, this is self-aware now.
Sir Nighteye says, all right, yeah, the leader is Chisaki Overhaul. Overhaul has the ability to both dismantle and restore. Dismantle, a quirk that can destroy and then heal. And we have bullets that destroy quirks. And so Mirio and Deku have this big freak out. It's surprisingly intense, honestly.
It is.
For the
it's
moment
like a
having.
Full page, and the manga style shifts to more like just like a like they're breaking apart, like they're like the you know like a sketch kind of style.
It's and, like it's like everything is kind of being removed from around them and is leaving them alone in the world.
Yeah, like when your first girlfriend leaves you. That's basically the same you know, dish there.
So anyway,
yes.
Let's just move past that. So. Yeah, Mirio and Deku are really upset because they realize that Overhaul's daughter is the source of all of this. And but when all this is being discussed amongst the other heroes and students, they're really freaking out. And asshole hero is like, they're saying that he's turning his own daughter's body into these bullets and selling them on the black market. And Nighteye says, there's also all these uncertainties. We don't know this, we don't know that.
Yeah.
And we don't know what this could we don't have proof of what's going on here. We can theorize, though, what the, you know, extents of this plan could possibly be, and if the final version of these bullets could destroy a person's quirk permanently, you know, you could do a whole bunch of stuff with it then. The consequences are very, very ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And, so Vacuum is really pumped up and ready to go. Asshole hero is like, if your kids just rescued the girl at the time, then everything would have been fine. So now I was like,
dude, are you serious? Come on now. I think they already understood that. yeah, because they're not, Mirio and Deku are not feeling too hot about that.
No, they're very, very much, they're criticizing themselves inside their own heads. How could I possibly think I could be the greatest ever hero? And
yeah. But it doesn't last very long. Like, they realize, like, they kind of messed up, but they immediately, like, catch themselves, get back up, and get motivated to, like, okay, well, now we definitely have to save that girl.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, it's a very talky chapter of My Hero Academia, but there's some cool bits, and it's a very important plot moving forward.
So, mm-hmm.
And we still don't know what the hell the villain meeting was about. We introduced other meeting after that one and then got through it.
it's like, okay, guys, do you want to see a really dark meeting between the villains trying to figure out how to take over the heroes? Or do you want to see, like, you know, the Crime Stopper meeting between the heroes where they discuss, like, the hierarchy of the layout of the criminal network in the city and where the drug cartels are? Yeah, the second one, totally.
Yeah. But, why not?
Why not, right? I did. Okay, so Overhaul's daughter, I was like looking at this, like, does she have like a particular quirk that can nullify quirks? And then that's why they put it in the bullets and they fired it off, because I'm
Overhaul's
trying to understand
ability,
what the purpose is of...
If Overhaul's ability is to destroy, then maybe his daughter has a variation on that, like a specialized, you know, destroy thing. So maybe that's what it has to do with. Like, it destroys something at a cellular level that's very specific. He could have done the same thing. He could have done the same thing that Endeavor did, where he just had a bunch of kids to make sure that he got the one with the right combination of quirks that he wanted.
That's kind of fucked up, but it makes sense. because I was just looking at his quirk, like, okay, he can, you know, break down the cells in her body and create these dart things, but how would that necessarily stop a quirk unless she had something with that too? So, yeah, I mean, I like the chapter. I used to review My Hero Academia weekly, mm-hmm. and the reason I don't do it anymore is because I still love the story, but then you get chapters like this that are really long in dialogue, and it doesn't really fit with my kind of, like, reviewing style and stuff. But they're still really, like, interesting to go into. I'm still really into the story. It's just, it doesn't fit my style when I do the, like, the One Piece reviews or whatever. But, yeah.
Are you still on that Kaminari is the traitor train?
I haven't even thought about that in a while. But the last time I thought about that was, he might have been kind of like a red herring, like, more or less being kind of set up. But we'll see where that goes. I haven't really thought of someone else. What's your opinion on that?
I'm on Hagakure. You hide the eyes, you hide the lies.
I really like Hagakure. So I guess I'm a little biased there.
I find her annoying, so.
Oh, you know, I don't know. I think she needs to have her moment to shine, and then you'll turn around. I don't know. I didn't really care much for Kirishima at the beginning, and now he's like, it got rushed all of a sudden. Like, all of a sudden he went from being like this, oh, okay, I'm not like a really well-known hero in Class 1A, but then all of a sudden all this stuff happens. He stops a criminal organization. He saved one of the darts. I'm like, oh, way to go, Kirishima, you're indispensable. And he's like, I am awesome. I'm so useful. Yeah,
he's definitely gotten brought into being one of the major supporting characters currently.
Yeah,
really playing up also his inferiority complex. I wish that we would get more from, I mean, Uraraka is going to be in on this whole thing, but Eden and Uraraka were supposed to be like the main parts of that, and they've just kind of gone in the background.
See, that's one of the problems we have with the series that has like 20, you know, characters that make up the main cast. But Horikoshi, I think that's the mangaka.
Yeah,
Horikoshi does a great job at that, because, you know, like, okay, well, here's, you know, Deku and Uraraka and stuff, and here's the main cast and everything, but they kind of like cycle through certain, you know, spots in the story, like, you know, Tokoyami, here's his like spotlight, you know, and all that stuff. So far they're doing a pretty good job of balancing it, I think. Sometimes that means heroes are going to be kind of shoved to the wayside, but aside from that, you know, it's a pretty good balancing act he's doing.
All right, so from that, let's move on to another series that has a very large cast.
Oh my, yes.
It's Fairy Tail, and we have, of course, figures that went on the fucking week that Chris isn't here. We've got two chapters.
I mean, like, it sucks also that we never get two chapters of One Piece, or two chapters of My Hero Academia, but every so often we'll always get, for every series we're going to get two chapters of, it's always going to be Fairy Tail. Yep.
So... 532 and 533. So, and 532 has color pages, like three color pages.
Yes,
at the
and
start.
People have.
Jesus
people
Christ! How does Hiro find the time?
I don't know. Maybe it's a conspiracy, but people have pointed out that, wait a second, are these different panels confirming the fan ships, comparing the pairings in the series?
That is something that I was wondering about, because it starts off, we get this flashback, which appears to be the time that Xerath and Mavis did it in order to conceive what's his name?
August,
right.
Yeah, in a pond, which I don't know if that, okay.
I mean, little gross, but whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
It's an excuse for them to be naked, question mark? Whatever.
Yeah. Gotta still censor it. It's heavy on the fan service, but there are limits.
Now, the chapter is titled I Can No Longer See Love. And yeah, there's split panels that show primarily, like, established romantic couples, in the series. There's Lucy and Natsu, there's Gray and Juvia, there's Levi and fucking
Gajiel.
There's so many G names that I get confused sometimes.
Hey, don't feel bad. I forgot who. Damn it! Deku's rival in My Hero Academia.
Bakugo.
There you go! Jesus Christ!
There's Ever and there's Elfman. There's Urza and Gerard. There's Gildarts and Kana because they're father and daughter. And then there's Wendy and Sherry because...
You missed Mira Jane and Loxus.
I deliberately passed over that so we could go over it. It's like, wait a minute.
Just didn't... Okay.
Is that a thing? Has it been a thing?
I mean, honestly, if you think about what Mira Jane's personality was before, you know, she thought Lisanna died, she was, like, way more, like, whack when they were, like, kids. That is a personality that's more similar to Loxus. But, I mean, like, I didn't know. Is there, like, a relationship there that I just didn't notice?
There's so many couples in Fairy Tail. There are freaking pointlessly unimportant characters in the story that you would not know anything about if they weren't a couple with someone else. Like, what's her name? Jenny from Blue Pegasus is in a couple with someone else in the group.
I think Rin.
Which I don't even know who the fuck that is.
I think he's the guy that has the tanner skin. In Blue Pegasus.
Okay, I believe you.
Is he a snow mage? I don't even know.
It doesn't matter. So, it is just kind of weird because, like, okay, here's all these that are very obviously, like, okay, there's the established romantic couples. Then there's freaking Mira and Loxus, which is like, wait a minute. And then you get to the end, and it's like, is this where the romantic couples are supposed to stop? Because there's Gildarts and Kana. It's like, alright, and then there's Wendy and Sherry, and it's like,
Now, Nick, let's not discriminate.
Is it a different type of love that you're talking about now?
Yes. But then you get the one odd duck in the group, which is, you know, it's Gildarts and Kana, which, okay, father and daughter, but okay, everyone else is apparently a
There's couple. A weird way that their relationship is portrayed, too, that when that one came up, I was just like... what you trying to go hero?
I'm sorry, we're missing the bigger picture that is Fairy Tail. Clearly the hidden message is, it's all about the love that's in human beings. So these are all the characters that express love for each other. It's not all about...
As long as we have Fairy Tail, everything is fine.
It's not all about romantic love, you common plebs. Okay, whatever.
It's not all about romantic love, you said, after putting down like five romantic loves in a row.
Exactly, yeah. There was an Omake chapter once of Fairy Tail where Hiro just literally draws Gajiel and Levi just like making out. It was like a dream sequence, but he still drew it. So
they're an actual romantic couple now. You could just do that.
Yeah, you really could. Yeah,
they are basically at the stage where they are they fucking confess their love for each other. You might as well just have them make out all the time. Why not?
Mashima's cock blocking us, man. He's just like, no, sorry, you're not getting it. I'll give you that.
It's just like, look, as long as I can't just draw naked boobies, then you will not.
He's like, I'm going to ignite the fires to the fan fictions, but I'll let everyone else take it from there. I'm not going to draw it. I'll let everyone else have their own conclusions.
Fucking evil.
Which, whatever. Anyway, I guess we should talk about the actual chapter.
Right. So Natsu wants to kick Xeris ass.
Dragon Force.
He's unleashed Dragon Force. He's going to punch Xeris really, really hard, and Mavis gets in the way. And so Natsu's like, "You should get out of my way." And Mavis's like, "Let me talk to him." And Xeris's like, "Well, since you're in arm's reach now, oink."
I'm like, I think we're way beyond the talkie point at this point, Mavis. I mean, come on now.
Mavis says, wait, hear me out. I can release you from your immortal life. I have figured it out. And Xerath does pause for a second, but he says, no, I've literally tried every form of magic. I've been doing this for thousands of years.
I think it's just 400, isn't it?
Whatever. I've been doing this for
close enough.
Thousands of months.
Actually, I still think that would only be 100. Continue. I'm sorry.
So, if it's 400 years...
Okay, let's take a second.
If it's 400 years times 12 months is thousands of months, so fuck off.
12 times 400 is 4,800. Okay, shit, I was wrong. Okay, I'm sorry.
Come on, that's... So Mavis points out, because Zero says, there is no way that I can be defeated. Even End cannot defeat me. And Mavis says, well, then why are you afraid of Nacogdoches?
Uh-huh.
And this is actually pretty clever, I think.
I like this. I really did, because that was a question I had for a while. Like, okay, he's immortal, yet Acnologia is around. Why can't he? Best shot at killing yourself is probably Acnologia.
Yeah. So Zero says, I fear Acnologia because I cannot die. But I cannot defeat him, not even as an immortal. He is here to end human history. Humanity will soon be destroyed, and the only ones remaining will be you and me. So toying with us could become his favorite pastime. Yeah. We cannot die, so we would be his eternal playthings. That's... Yeah. That's a really good point, Zeref.
I mean, provided that Acnologia doesn't just straight up blow up the entire planet, but I guess he needs a place to live. So, yeah, though, getting hunted by a dragon that you can never... I mean, like, you'll never die, but he'll, like flame your ass up, like, every now and then, and, you know, you'll, like, have to suffer that a lot. So.
Yeah, you would spend all of eternity in your own purgatory, essentially.
Yeah, basically, yes.
So,
that was pretty clever. I did enjoy that. So he's like, okay, so I have to go with Neo Eclipse.
Yeah. And so he starts to absorb Mavis's magic power. Natsu is like, oh no, I will stop him. Kind of slow, I guess, because that doesn't seem to work. We cut away to the Blue Pegasus ship. Everyone is, you know, running away from Nacogdoches because they can't suck him into the eclipse or whatever. Mm-hmm. He says, weirdly, he actually mocks them as he's chasing them, saying, as long as a dragon exists there, I will slay it. I mean, you could just say you want to kill them, whatever.
Can he shoot fire?
He can shoot magical blasts of energy, yeah. I guess
like
that they're...
Like a death laser or something, a laser.
I guess,
like,
they're just moving so quickly that he can't reliably hit them.
I guess. Doesn't even give it a shot, though. That's kind of weird. But whatever.
So, what's her name? Ancestor to Lucy.
Lucy's
Anna,
ancestor.
Anna. Yeah, that's it. That's Anna. It. I'm sorry. We've had so long to get to know this very important, intriguing character.
I was going to say Layla, but no, that was Lucy's
mom.
That was
her mother.
Yeah, that was her mother.
They all look the same. I'm sorry. It's by design, but they do.
they kind of know. I mean, like, Anna has a few more lines under her face, although it's sometimes you can't see them. Like, they're really hardly apparent half the time, but that's pretty much it.
So,
just go by their clothes for the most part.
Joel says he's going to buy some time for them to get away. I don't think he ever actually gets this chance. But,
well, yeah, I don't think he does.
Meanwhile, back with Mavis, she's still getting her magic power absorbed, and Natsu's apparently gone from trying to stop Zeref to just saying, stop that.
Yeah.
I guess we're meant to interpret that he's moving towards him. But it doesn't look that way.
Yeah, because in the last panel before what we saw, it was like he was rushing toward them, and now he's just like standing there with like an expression like, get the hell away from her! I can't actually figure out what to do here. Actually, it looks like Zeref is like groping Mavis a little bit, but whatever.
It is somewhat sexual,
yeah,
the way that he's got her. But I don't know, a lot of the interaction between these two has played off of that deliberately, so...
Made all the worse by the fact Mavis, it looks like a small child. So, yeah, that doesn't help things very much.
So, Zeref says, Neo Eclipse is a magic that lets a person live their life over. I'm going to return to my original self 400 years ago, when I had a family, when I had a beloved baby brother. I will never become immortal. I will die just like anyone else. It's too bad that we'll never meet, but you'll probably live a much happier life having never met me. So sorry, Mavis.
And, like, you know, the space-time continuum will be ripped to shreds,
paradoxes
and crap, but that's, you know, I didn't consider that point.
So, and then he also says, but also I'll make you a promise. Long before he becomes as powerful as he is now, I will kill Acnologia. I'll ask Natsu to fight him with me. I will see to it that he is no threat to humanity's future. So I will bid farewell to this world.
Okay, so still kind of a douche nugget, but I mean, that was nice.
Yeah. But Mavis says, no, you mustn't erase this world. This world is where I met you.
Not just so precious, Nick.
So this relationship between the two of them has been very weird, honestly.
I know.
I can't tell, because it throws in these moments that outside of context would, I think, be very sweet and really play to the fact that these two really did love each other. But it's got that kind of Joker Harley thing to it.
It does.
Where
yeah,
if you look at it all in context, it's like, yeah, I really shouldn't be. You shouldn't be trying to get me to root for this couple, though, is the thing. Because he is a world destroying evil maniac.
I mean, on the surface, it's like a really interesting relationship they've had. Like, they're two immortals, you know, one is, you know, the Black Wizard, and one is, you know, Mavis is very much full of light a lot of times, and like, they're immortals, but they fell in love with these immortal bodies, and just like, okay, that's kind of pure and innocent, but then, you know, you have moments where Xerath basically just uses her as means to an end a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So, Xerath drops Mavis, she falls to the floor, and, Xerath says, she's not dead. I just sucked all the magic out of her. I bet you did.
Sucked her dry. Mm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
And so he unleashes Fairy Heart. Huge explosion of magic goes across the frickin' landscape through the buildings outside. And Xerath is gone all one-winged angel at the end of the first chapter.
Yep.
He is now Xerath the White.
With infinite magic power.
Yeah, totes. Yeah.
Totes, buddy. Oh, wait. Okay, so wait. You mean to tell me that the cliffhanger of a fairy tale chapter ended with a really cool setup for a really cool design of a power-up? I've never seen this before, Nick. I think this is going to lead to a really
I've never
cool
seen
payoff.
That happen in manga in general.
Well, it happens in fairy tale a lot, and he always drops the ball pretty soon. Case in point, God Serena.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. Dude, look, I wrote like a 5-page, you know, essay on notes. I got a video all set up, ready to go. It's just that with it ending, I was going to do it a few weeks back, but I'm like, you know what? It's ending soon. I'm just going to wait till it's all done, and then I'm just going to launch into like a whole hour-long video discussing it. So, I mean,
just God Serena.
I've been analyzing so many different like tropes and stuff in this story. It's more than I care to, but here we are now. I'll bring this up now, I guess. Like, his whole thing is to travel back in the past in the Neo Eclipse, so I guess...
Yeah, he's got to get back.
He's got to get back to the past, you know, Samurai Jack. But, I mean, like, I guess the infinite magic power Xerath the White, I guess that's necessary for it, but we'll see next chapter, I guess, what he does with
it. Oh, yeah, I guess we will.
Right. Oh, okay.
Chapter
we'll
533.
We'll see you back here in 2 seconds. Future Matt has to deal with. Oh shit.
So we see a lot of the aftermath of the explosion of magical power that Xerath sent out when he transformed. A whole bunch of the members of Fairy Tail are kind of picking themselves up, talking about a couple of different things. Nothing really especially important. We see this one scene of like a bunch of different people just worrying about a bunch of different other people.
Makarov's still dead, so that's...
He's still dead, yeah,
That's consistent, yeah.
We cut over to Lucy and Gray and Happy. They still have the end tome with them, and so Gray's like, what the hell is this anyway? And Lucy says, it's high-level organic link magic. I think that this book is connected to Natsu through an organic link. Maybe we could overwrite the words!
Yep. This is what this is. So let me translate that for you.
And then he lived happily ever after.
Let me translate this. Holy shit, great. We just discovered the script to Fairy Tales. We can rewrite anything we want now.
Man, there's a lot of pages dedicated to me being in sexual compromised positions, huh?
Yeah, like, oh man, there's that time I showed my ass, and there's that time that my boobs got bigger, and here's that time. This is all over the place. What the hell?
Okay. So Gray doesn't have a problem with the mere concept of, oh, sure, we can just rewrite the book. Why not?
Yeah.
What he just points out is, we opened up the tome and all those words came out. And that was just one page. It's just a fraction of what's there. How can we possibly manage to rewrite the whole thing? And Luce is like, I'm sure there's a page in there that will save Natsu. We have to find it!
And then Natsu gained all the power in the world. Like, I wonder if that's all you would have to do is just write that in there and that would become the case. I don't know how does this work.
And then this is just going to end with Xerath being like, I am going to give up my powers and go back home forever for no reason!
Oh, man.
So, Natsu is facing off against one-winged angel Xerath. He charges in to attack him because, of course, he does. Loses a big attack, huge punch, huge explosion that wrecks a big wall and a big hole in the wall of the guild.
I think that's the same attack he used to kill that god that one time.
Probably.
Yeah, the demolition fist, yeah.
And he just completely obliterated Xerath, just completely blown away. There's no trace of him. And Notch is like, ah, sorry, Gramps, I wrecked the guild again.
Along with Xerath.
Yeah, he's totally dead. It's really easy. But magical particles come flowing back together. They reform Xerath's body. And he says, this is the power of Fairy Heart. Space and time. Everything is mine to control. It is a limitless, eternally renewing power. You could call it the pinnacle of all magic.
Awesome. Why don't you use it for what you said you were going to use it for?
You're going to put a hole in your chest first. Ah!
Yeah, why are you still even here, bro? What the fuck?
Why is it always just like, I have the power to remake everything? It's like, we're going to get to the point where it's just like, whatever. I've seen that like 50 times
already.
Yeah,
it's like when you say that you give your character an incredible OP ability that like, oh man, how could this possibly be countered? It's like, oh, I'm writing myself into a corner and I have to figure some bullshit way on how they can counter that. So, yeah. But yeah, he does get one last burn-in on Natsu, pun intended, because he's like, earlier you said sorry to Gramps. Sorry, but he's already dead.
And that's the end of the chapter. He has shoved his hand through Natsu's chest, left him mortally wounded, and that's it.
Yep.
Significantly more just big action beat chapter than the previous one, and It definitely seems as though the two chapters were designed so that the second one would be a lot shorter to go through. Overall, honestly, given the usual standard fairy tale sets, I thought these two chapters were actually pretty good. There are things to nitpick in them, definitely. But I was definitely getting drawn into it the first time that I was reading through it, so I don't actually have too much bad to say about them.
You know, honestly, yeah, I like the reason why, like, Akhmalogi and Xerath, I thought that was a really clever idea. I even like the aesthetic of White Xerath. It's just that every single time this happens, I'm always setting myself up for disappointment. Probably the one issue that it wasn't an issue right now, but it's probably going to be later on, is how they're setting up that end tome to be kind of like a sort of like a deus ex machina, how just like, oh, I'll just and Natsu got a hole blasted in his chest. No, he didn't. And then he's just he's good to go, which might very well be the way they heal him for all we know. I mean, so but in terms of just these two chapters, yeah, I mean, aside from a few nitpicks, I thought they were pretty solid.
It definitely seems as though it's going to be just reality-bending powers versus reality-bending powers. It seems to be heading in that direction.
You gotta love when the climax of your shonen manga just resorts to that. It's great.
Yay! I'm still not convinced this is the final arc, though. So,
you don't think it's ending?
I've got this... I don't know. It just feels like Xerath will be defeated here, and then Akhmalogia later. That's just how it feels to me.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure they were going to show off the... And, like, they're leading up to the end. I don't even announced it was ending soon.
I wouldn't be surprised if it were. I just get this feeling, you know? So...
Yeah.
Okay. But anyway, let's just move on. I'll get through Food Wars fairly quickly since...
Yes, Food Wars is one of the two chapters I did not... I'm not caught up. I read the chapter, but I'm just not caught up with the actual series, so...
So you probably don't know too much about what the hell is going on here and why there are students that are just in a jail cell. And
you know what? I saw that and I was like, oh, okay, here's the one team. And the translation I read called one team the Rebel Alliance. So I was like, okay, well, whatever. And then you get to a bunch of students just in cages. Like, what the fuck? Isn't this like a cooking competition? Why are they like, are they actually being held captive? Like, are they going to die if something goes wrong? Like, what the hell?
So, it's Soma versus Kinokuni still. The dishes have been presented. This dish is all about the judges who got their big introduction in the last chapter, trying out Kinokuni's dish.
Mm-hmm.
Soma is perplexed because I don't know their names yet, but the female judge who is dragging the books around, she's just got this table set up behind her, which is just, oh yeah, I got all the past versions of the WGO for reference. Just brought them all along here. You know, why not?
Yeah.
So they start eating, they're slurping up the soba, having a good time, and they're like, oh yes, we must, you know, now I should try a little bit more in order to make sure to properly analyze it. Ah, my bowl is empty. And one of them specifically says, who took my noodles? Who hid them from me? And someone's like, no one took your noodles. You just ate them. We did?
Oh, wow.
I mean, I don't know if this is a common problem, but do you get insanely hungry when reading this manga?
Sometimes, yes.
Yes.
It's not the noodles themselves that do it. I think that the shrimp looks great.
Yeah, the shrimp looks so damn good. There was even one character, have no idea who his name is, was like, oh my god, I'm eating freaking soba tonight. This looks good.
Yeah. I think that it's actually... It might be one of the dude bros.
The dude bros. Yeah, the dude bros. Yeah.
So, they go through, it's like, oh, this is what the tempura shrimp, blah, 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 blah. They're really wrapped up in the taste. The judge pulls out a tome in order to analyze it. They really play up, this speaks to the power of the Edo Suba noodle tradition and to just how much time Kinokuni-senpai has devoted to her craft. And then there is a random The Girl Who Leapt Through Time reference in the middle of the chapter.
Is that what that was?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just flat out like a parody of the poster for The Girl Who Leapt Through Time, the movie. And it's referred to as the soba that leapt through time. Because.
Yep.
Food Wars is a weird series.
Yeah, I've noticed, but yeah. I thought it was, I mean, I've always liked the art of this series. I thought the art was already really solid there. It's just I haven't got caught up to it, yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, after they've gotten to taste their dishes, Kinokuni's like, aha, this is what I am capable of. Well, Ishiki, what do you think of that? And won't you take back your words now, saying that I would lose? And someone's like, hey, you know, I've spent a whole lot of time perfecting my dish, too. So take a look at my soba noodle dish. And he serves up his fried yakisoba dish. And that's where the chapter ends.
Oh, that looks so damn good. But
it looks good, too. Food! It looks delicious, yes.
It does. So I guess Soma's in a competition with this other, like, chick right now, and they're, you know, like, I guess, just give me, like, a brief abridged on what the hell's going on right now.
So, there is this guy called Azami who took over the school about a year and a half ago in publication.
Okay.
And so he's been laying out his own way for people to do things, and has said, if you don't follow my curriculum, then you're expelled, essentially.
Okay, and, he's a dick. Okay.
Right. So it's essentially as if you went to a school for the creative arts, and you were like, you can only paint this way. Like,
okay, I get you. Yeah. And of course, because it's a food school, they're all a chef school, they're all about... you know, creativity in your dishes and all that shit, yeah.
So, in order to... this is the last battle between the resistance movement against his administration. So it's a big team battle, where it's 8 people on Soma's side against the 8 remaining members of the Council of 10.
Okay.
And, it basically boils down to a bunch of individual matches and kind of a gauntlet-style thing.
So who's winning so far, if this is the last match?
This is the first match.
Oh, this is the first match. Okay.
There are 3 that are going on concurrently with each other at this time.
Okay.
And so Soma and Kinokuni are just the first that are getting to present their dishes.
Right, I see. All right.
So, yeah. It was a It was a pretty all right chapter overall. The thing that honestly just stands out the most, though, is just the girl who leapt through time reference. It was right there in the middle of the chapter.
I've never seen the movie, but
neither have I.
I've seen many references to it. I think there was even a video game once about it or something. I don't know. But, yeah, I saw that. I'm like, is that what that's from? I guess, kind of. Yeah.
All right.
Okay. So next is Dr. Stone.
Dr. Stone. So, this is a new one for you.
I read it all today, and out of the two I had to read today, I have to say I probably enjoyed this one more. I always tend to like manga that are more on the, they always try to like do like logically, like here's how to do this, and it actually ties back into like real world science and everything like that. I guess it falls under the purview of like sci-fi, I guess, a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
I enjoyed this series, I really do. So this is chapter 7.
Yeah. The Gunpowder Adventure.
Yes.
So, Senku is leading our other two heroes down a path to try and get the chemicals necessary in order to create gunpowder so that they can shoot Tsukasa. Or... So,
Yeah, that's just, that's a great... Come on, guys, let's go on a little adventure so we can get this, we can make a gun to shoot somebody. They don't actually explain how they're going to make the gun yet, by the way. It's
no,
just
no,
the bear.
Just the gunpowder.
Just the gunpowder. Let's just start simple with this, I guess.
I mean, you can do a lot with gunpowder in general anyway. You know, make explosions and stuff.
Yeah, but they specifically, I think it was Senku that specifically said, we're going to create a gun. Like, humanity created the invention. Okay, like, you can make a gun without metal, I guess. Like, the Chinese discovered this shit a while ago. They had, like, cannons and stuff. But they think the easier method would just be able to just make a bomb and throw it at them. I guess that would be the better method.
Powder bombs, yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
So, Senku has a sextant. And he's, yes, like, explaining how he's using it. He's like, oh, it has been 35.97 seconds since the sun rose today. And Yuzuri is like... not 35.97, 35,970 seconds.
970, yeah.
And Yuzuri is like, how did you just count like that? And I'm just like, oh, well, he counted to over 100 billion or something like that while we were a statue. So
a trillion. Well, it was like over a trillion. Yeah. So I'm like, yeah, this is no problem for him.
And Senku, you know, already knows where they want to go. He says that, you know, I think that we're near Kamakura, but I don't know what our exact coordinates are. Taiji's like, okay, well, we could use a building as a landmark. And Senku's like, well, all the buildings will have rotted away. So, nope.
Nope, sorry.
But Yuzuriha manages, happens to notice, hey, there's like no plants growing in this spot here. And they actually do have a landmark. And Senku's like, ah, we are 35.19 degrees north by 139.32 degrees east. Because, you know, he can just know that shit.
Yeah, I understand he's a smart dude. But he he knows the exact Latin longe of this one location that he did not know was going to be relevant before the event occurred. He just happens to know this exact Latin longe for this exact, like, landmark. But okay, fair enough.
And so they come across this massive statue of a Buddha. And we get a little flashback to Yuzuriha's past, where apparently she had the same fucking headband as she does now. And
that's what that was? I thought it was a freaking... I thought it was like a headphones or something.
I'm assuming that it's a... I'm assuming that it's a headband until proven otherwise. So.
Yeah, okay, fair enough, I guess.
We get a little flashback from her perspective where she visited when she was a kid, which is kind of cute.
Yeah, and she starts to cry, mostly because, you know, this whole, you know, 3,000 years have passed. It's kind of like she just had to deal with that like a few hours ago. She just woke up and just got thrust into all this. So kind of nice that they're taking time to actually address that she's not really acclimated to this yet.
Yeah, because she's crying, and she kind of puts on like a brave face even while she is crying, because this really drives home for her, seeing this statue. And the fact that it's so aged and broken down, like, it really did happen. You know, this really is thousands of years in the future, and my mom and my dad and everyone I knew, they're all gone. And it's really weird because she's saying this while she's smiling, but she's very clearly broken up about it. There is also a bit of a... This moment is kind of broken up by Taiji freaking out. Like, who made you cry? What happened?
Is that big guy? I'll fight him. Is that just the Buddha statue? Oh, okay. Well, Taiju is kind of a Buddhist, isn't he? Because he's, you know, he prays occasionally and stuff, so he's kind of, like, I think, into that.
Buddhism is a pretty popular religion in Japan,
yeah,
so...
It's Buddhism and Shinto, I think, are the two biggest ones. Yeah.
And atheism! Atheism
is it? Wow, I didn't know
that. Well, not atheism, but non-religious. There are a lot of people... Right. Like, something like 50% of the population is just not religious, so...
Okay, yeah.
So... The reason that they were able to find all this is because, you know, the copper, you know, affects the ground around
it. It doesn't break down, and it affects the area immediately around it. Like I guess when it does break down, it, like, is poisonous to the plant life, so everything dies around it, and the actual statue doesn't erode in the same way.
And there's a cool moment, because Taiju is trying to romanticize this moment. It's like, look, this Buddha statue stood here for thousands of years, never rotting away. And Senku's like, that's because it's made of bronze, and it's very resistant to rotting. Well, but look, there's no plants rotting around it, so this was a divine sign, so we would be more easily find it. No, the copper just seeped into the soil, and it's toxic for most vegetation.
Like, no, it's Buddhism is the one true faith. I've cracked the nut. I'm like, okay, fair enough.
And, immediately, Senku is like, hey, we can use all this bronze to make to make more accurate tools. Thank you! And he just starts getting ready to carve it
apart. Yeah, just start breaking down the Buddha.
And like, don't! No!
It's like, this is every man for himself at this point. Sorry, Buddha.
And we get a bit of a montage of the group camping out. They find, some proper vegetation that they can eat. They travel along... go down a river. There's even a little moment where they're going to fucking bed and Taiju won't go to sleep.
Taiju carrying the raft down the river for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And eventually Taiju notices, hey, Yuzuriha, you've still got some of your toes still have stone on them. And Yuzuriha's like, oh, you know, I didn't want to bother anyone with it. Taiju, you know, just pours some more of their chemical compound on it to free it. And they talk a little bit about the stone process, what happened with their bodies. Because Senku points out, you know, we've got these cracks on our face, but we're still alive, even though damage occurred.
Yeah, apparently, like, if you're broken up, because we've already established, if you're completely shattered and you use the potion, you'll just turn back into a corpse and you're dead. But I guess if you have small, minute cracks on your body, it'll just, like, forcibly, like, seal it up, and you'll have these permanent scars, but that you won't be dead. Mm-hmm. So, it's a cool look, anyway.
And, of course, fucking Yuzuriha doesn't have any scars on her face, because she's the pretty girl.
Yeah, she's the beauty of the manga. We can't have her... I mean, I don't know. I thought she would be fine if she had one, just for consistency, but whatever.
I think it has to do also with the fact that her body was protected by the tree.
Yeah, it was protected by the tree, so, you know, like, Taiju's was... We don't really know what happened with Senku's, but Taiju's was, like, you know, carried down river and everything and landed into that cave, so it probably suffered a little bit of, you know, superficial damage there.
And, so... While this is going on, we cut over to Shishio, and he's just... It's this great panel to cut over to him because, you know, first it's, you know, a far out shot of their original campsite, and then it zooms in and it's just this long panel of him. Like, you could just freaking hear the drums in your head as he's preparing his hunts to go on. He's got the lion pelt around himself, crouching to the ground, analyzing the footprints.
And he figures it out, like, right away. He's like, oh, it makes it seem like they left in a hurry. But no, I know they didn't. They're going to go, and he figures out they're going to this place to get gunpowder. Yeah. So, yeah.
Chris and I were talking about, the levels of intelligence for the three guys in the group. Because we know very little about Yuzuriha.
Yeah, she was just revived.
She seems like she's, I guess average intelligence as far as I can tell. But at the time, we were talking about, okay, Taiju's a fucking dumbass. Senku is absurdly intelligent. Tsukasa seems like he's of roughly average to above average intelligence.
Yeah, I would. Oh no, he's definitely above average intelligence.
This chapter definitely clinched it.
There's no way. In fact, it's even almost close to Taiju, and I mean, since it's close to Senku in a sense, because he figures it out. Like, are they going to make gunpowder? What do they need for gunpowder? Will they need this thing? We're going to find out. And then he's like, that's one of the location where it'd be nearest. That place. That's where they're going. And unlike them, they don't need a sextant. He doesn't need a sextant or anything. He can, like, track them using, his skills, and he can find them like that, so...
This definitely really plays up his abilities overall. Because we're cutting back and forth between the group relaxing in some hot springs that they have found, which Senku also says, hey, and also there's a chemical here which we can use in order to make black powder. And then he's just like, they're going to Hakone! I must stop them before Senku does this! Exactly. This guy's getting just more and more... He's really been growing over the course of this story since his introduction, just getting more and more ridiculous and more intimidating and evil-looking.
I'm not sure how I like... I don't think I like Tsukasa very much. I mean, just like, from the moment he showed up, and he's just like, I'm a high school student, just punched a lion in the face. And I'm like, okay, then, that seems... All right, I'll deal with it. It's a manga. But then you have, like, he immediately understands the situation. He's like, oh, okay, well, whatever. I will hunt for you, and we'll never... Like, he immediately does this. I'm like, okay. And it's just, I don't know. I can't get a lock on him yet. I don't know what it's going to happen. I don't know if it's going to be, like, a moment where they actually kill him, or if it's going to be, like, they manage to keep him around, and he turns over a new leaf. I have no idea. I can't get a beat on him yet.
He's still very enigmatic at this point.
Yeah.
So I do think that there's going to come a time where you really do come to grasp what kind of a character he is. But yeah, it is a little hard to figure him out at this point.
So far, it's pretty much just like he's a kind of guy that reads the situation exactly and then acts accordingly. And like he'll know what to do. Like, okay, I've been frozen in stone. I have to punch lions. Sure. Oh, we have to hunt for food. Okay, sure. But then he gets to the point where it's like, oh, well, I have to kill all these, inferior humans so that the human race isn't corrupted. So I'm going to do that. Oh, these people are now turning against me. Oh, I'm going to go kill them. He just comes to these conclusions, like, really quick.
Very little dwelling on the situation, I get your point, yeah.
Yeah. All right.
So, and that's the... And yeah, I get your point, because when you have to think about a situation, that... And the internal monologue at that point can really reveal a lot about somebody, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You get into the reasons for why someone is doing something like that, and also their approach to stuff. When it's... very quick and matter of fact, then it's just kind of like, okay, well, he's kind of perfect then, I guess. That's all I really know.
That's, yeah, and I don't like that kind of character, but, chapter 7, we'll see where this goes. Mm. But yeah, so they arrive at the hot springs, and they actually set up their own little dividing barrier.
Of course, and of course, freaking Taiju, innocent-ass Taiju, is the one who's like, we'll have a boy section and a girl section!
Just like, okay, sure, whatever. I guess that's one step back to civilization. I wonder how our caveman ancestors had a hot spring adventure, Nick. I wonder how they did it.
I'm pretty sure they wouldn't have set up a boundary between guys and girls. All right, so let's move over to We Never Learn.
Yeah.
So this series actually premiered like 2 weeks before Dr. Stone did. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of weird because it's behind Dr. Stone at this point because they just didn't pick it up as quickly. So
right. I mean, with that being said, I really enjoyed this. Is chapter 6, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think they're a little bit more beyond that because I read the entire thing because it was I really liked it. Before we get into this, I just have to throw this out there just to let you know about my bias. I like Rizu. She's so freaking cute.
I felt like I might tease by saying, who's best girl for you? There's three of them, so there's a harem conversation, so you have to have a best girl.
who's yours?
I think I like Rizu too, honestly.
Damn you!
Well, because I fucking hate Iruka. She's annoying. And then Fumino is kind of like, she's nice, but she's kind of standard.
The innocent, kind of clumsy girl, sort of,
I've always, in this type of series, kind of gravitated towards the more no-nonsense kind of girls.
I don't usually do that, which I find it weird, but I I don't know what it was there.
You can just say it's because she's got the biggest boobs.
No. That's not the only reason. That's a leprechaun.
She wears glasses, too.
There's more to her character than her breasts.
Don't. I don't know. Judging by the way that Iruka treats her,
You've
got big tits, Ogata.
I tend to like girls that have shorter hair and glasses, and then I think that's just
that's
it.
Fine.
It's pretty smart spec, so that's that.
This is question 6, or chapter 6 of We Never Learn. A genius's conception of modern technology is X. And we're introduced to the chapter-long problem, which is that Ogata's got to do an essay, an argumentative essay. And it's kind of odd because they're in high school, and it's sort of like the positional paper that you would have to do in, like, middle school, I think.
I was thinking that, especially since this
very
is, like...
basic paper topic.
This is third year, and this is a Japanese high school. This ain't no bullshit. This is a Japanese high school. And it's just like, oh, I just have to do this really basic, like, intro, body, conclusion, period, the kind of thing. We would even do those, like, beginning in, like, fifth grade in, like, elementary school. And unless they do this kind of thing like every week, but it's set up like they don't. This is just like a normal assignment that they have like a few weeks to do or days to do or whatever. I don't get it, but whatever.
And all the other students in her, well, they do. They have established that each of the girls is completely clueless in the topic that they want to pursue, but is a specialist in the other.
Yes.
And, you know, they're getting freaking, like, zeros or single digits on their test scores and stuff. So I get that they're completely incompetent about it. But it's weird because the way that Yuga ends up introducing here is the basics of essay writing and all that crap, it's like he's explaining it to her and also explaining it to the audience.
Yeah.
So...
Maybe the Japanese don't write essays as much, Nick. Maybe they're... I don't know. They're more based on mathematics and chemistry and science and shit. I don't know.
I guess it's entirely possible that that's the case. Or maybe the author just expects that. Well, I don't know why that would be either. When you think about, it must be like a high school, just like a high school thing that they start doing this in. You've got to think that like the key audience for a series like this would have to be like 12 to 18 or something like that.
Around there, yeah.
So this has to be for the sake of like the younger,
correct? Yeah.
Right. So this has to be like for the sake of the younger edge of people who are reading this series.
Oh man, I can't wait till they get to the chapter where they explain how to write a scientific report in all the context there. If you've ever had to do that, holy shit.
Only a couple of times, thank God.
they break that down. Like, I remember I got in trouble just because the layout of the cover page wasn't accurate. So, I mean, they're really... Although, I do love what Rizu does here. Because Yiga brings up, like, well, have you tried entering it before? And Rizu's like, oh, I've tried entering them before, but I immediately get them rejected. And what she does is literally just, like, here's my topic. I have no interest in this topic. And he's just like, yeah, that's, you have to redo this. And she's like, I don't understand, but I don't understand. I can't talk about something I don't want to.
She's got a point.
Well, you know what? I mean, okay, there's a lot of stuff in high school that I had to do that I didn't want to do. But the one thing I thought, I still did it, and I understand why I had to do it. But the bullshit thing was page lengths. Like, this has to be 8 pages long or whatever. I'm just like, you'll get how long I think I could talk about this subject. I'm not going to draw it out longer than I can. But, you know, that's me.
That's why they tell... God, I remember that they eventually proposed... That eventually one of my teachers came up with the... Just said, like, you need to just have a whole bunch of source material to draw from and just introduce a whole bunch of topics to explain where you came with your point. I'm just like, that's a lot of work.
Yeah, man. If I can explain my topic in 2.5 pages, the other 4.5 are just going to be completely, it's just going to be fluff material. I mean, I could give you 4.5 pages of bullshit material. I'm pretty good at that, but I don't think that's what you would want.
That's how they enforce it. It was like, no, you can't just do fluff. You just have to have a lot to talk about. And it's like, God, I don't want to though. I want to go play video games.
I guess my high school didn't have that position. Well, one of my English teachers didn't. Because I gave her a lot of fluff material, and she just...
Oh, this wasn't my English teacher who said this. This was, like, my history teacher, so...
Oh, okay. I was in an AP English class in my senior year of high school, and that lady, Mrs. Hosteller, she was pretty chill with it. She's just didn't set lengths. She's just like, write it as long as you can write it, and I'll grade it based on what you think. And she was awesome. So she kind of understood it. But yeah, this is not something I'm used to.
So Yuga says, you know, like, okay, when you're doing this essay, you know, it should be helpful to, it'll be helpful if you make short, concise arguments, you express a unique point of view. And Reese is like, but I don't have anything to say about the topic, though. I don't care about this topic. She gets a text, though, at that point from Iruka, and she's like, I'm not from swim practice, and I don't have any work, so I'm going to go to karaoke. You want to join me? And Reese is like, no.
Picture of her at karaoke, and then, like, and then she shows up, like, literally three panels later at his house.
Because Reese says, I'm studying at Yuiga's house. No. Just immediately fucking teleports there. And Ryuga's like, hey, what a coincidence! I was just about to ask Narayuki for some help.
She's a straight up stalker then, essentially.
Really did. She's
yeah.
She's gonna get like, I get the feeling she might get creepier and creepier as this series goes on. I don't know.
Have you read beyond this?
No, I have not, no.
Okay then. Well, let's all just right. Continue onward. I like Rizu's expression though, when she gets the text. Like maybe that's another reason I like her. When characters get really unique expressions and stuff. Oh, there was another manga. It only lasted like 6 months. I think actually it was because of you. It was Koisome Momiji? Or something like that? Koisome Momiji?
I've actually read that.
Yeah, it was about like autumn leaves in a play and a lady. Anyway, there was a lady in there and she had a really unique facial expressions all the time, and I thought she was an interesting character. It was canceled after like 20 chapters. Well, yeah. But that's the big thing for me, like the character expressions. But
a lot of romantic comedies get canceled very quickly. So
yeah, that's.
But you know, it's one of those cases where, because Shonen Jump does this, where you know it's like, okay, we have to have you know this type of series and this type of series and this type of series. Nisekoi, you know, after it ended, they're like, okay, we've got to find our next romantic comedy series. So
yeah.
If this one does end up getting canceled, you're going to see another one very quickly afterwards.
Yeah, so it's more of a matter of, I guess, quantity over quality, I guess, in this case. It's like, one's gone, we just pick another one off the conveyor belt.
Pretty much. So, Iruka's, like, very transparent about the fact that she just wants to spend time with Yuga because Rizu's doing it, because she's like, oops, I forgot my study supplies, dude!
Yeah. Did you touch my man?
So all of a sudden the power goes out, and I love Yuiga's reaction, because he's like, I'm sure I paid the electric bill this month.
Yeah. I'm like, come on, it's kind of sad, because he's like, oh yes, that's right, he's poor as shit. Oh, yeah. That's kind of sad.
But they quickly realize, oh hey, the streetlights are out, all the neighbors' power is out, so it's a blackout in the area. And Iruka's like, oh well, hey, this will be exciting, it's a blackout. But Risa's just like, what's the big deal? It's just a blackout. But she's
like inching closer to Yuiga.
Just kind of brushing up against him. And Yuiga's like, are you afraid of the dark? No, not even one picometer. Just still leaning up against his shoulder.
Yeah.
And because their phones are shit, Iruka and Ogata's phones run out of power immediately.
Well, I mean, to be fair, they are high school girls, so they're probably on their phones 24/7, so that actually kind of makes sense a little bit. But I actually am just, this chapter just like increases the obliviousness a little bit from Yuiga's perspective.
Oh my god, it's so ridiculous. Yeah. Because Ogata, they're left completely in the dark, so Ogata is grabbing onto the sleeve of his hoodie.
And dude, so, you are the luckiest motherfucker on the planet.
So he quickly realizes with her, like, okay, she's clearly scared. Uruka's like, hey, it looks like Rizu is getting really cozy with Narayuki. Maybe I should act like I'm scared too. And then she's like, okay. And she kind of goes, I'm so scared.
The expression on her face, though, looks like something else. It looks like she's like heavily panting, like, oh, I'm so scared. Oh. I'm like, okay.
And so Yuga's just like, hey, what's up with you?
Yeah, he's just staring off into space with these two girls like holding on to him, like, abort, retry, ignore. I cannot load. What am I supposed to do here?
So
Yuga, he likes, all right, let me show you how to DIY a candle. Here you go.
And yeah, he puts together a few different things, gets a makeshift candle going, and Yuga's like, huh, I can't believe that Takemoto's afraid of the dark too. Even though Iruka's just there going like, get to touch him. So yeah, he makes an oil lamp for them, and Ogata is kind of mystified because she's like, huh, it's sort of like a birthday party. And Yuga's like, yeah, it does. No, shut up. Can't feel emotion. Shut up.
Oh, shit. I was expressing an emotion there. No. It's against my character at this moment in time.
And Yuga says, you know, electricity is great, but every now and then it's nice to be able to gather around a tiny light in the darkness. I think it brings people closer. And Ogata says,
the music cues up in the background.
This is the lesson of the day.
Yeah.
And Iruka, dumbass that she is like, how long will this light last? Blows it out immediately. And they're left in the dark. And they're left stumbling around. And the implication here is that as they're groping around in the dark, Yuiga accidentally gropes around in the dark because the lights suddenly come back on. The electricity comes back on and they're left like with Iruka and Rizu just kind of like going,
I don't know what, huh?
And Yuga's like, what's wrong, guys?
nothing. Rizu's like the absolute worst. I'm like, okay.
She's got almost like her eyes look like targets, essentially.
Yeah, they're doing the Rinnegan thing that a lot of characters do. Big moms do that in One Piece occasionally. I don't really know what the implication is.
So, Ogata takes her leave immediately, and Yuga's like, oh no, you've got to do your work! And I was like, nope, bye.
Nope, they're not doing it, sorry.
But he talks with her the next day, and Ogata's like, oh yeah, my essay was approved, and I couldn't have done it without you, so thank you. And Yuga's like, oh, okay, what did I even do? And we actually get a glimpse of the teacher looking over the essay, and you know, there's this whole thing which is, you know, pretty standard. It was like, I took it for granted, but now I realize that it allows people to maintain proper. Now I realize that such technologies allow people to maintain proper space from one another. But there are some jerks out there who take advantage of the darkness to misbehave. Just thinking about it ticks me off.
It's like she just like she starts out soft, but it just devolves into a rant, you know.
And I do like how she took inspiration from Yuga's speech to then take the opposite stance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's a cool little twist on it. I'm still confused by the joke that he apparently just like grabbed him in the dark, given that he's so ignorant about. Because it would be one thing if he was like, "Oh, I'm so sorry," but he literally just doesn't realize what happened somehow.
He's very oblivious, and then I just realized, wait a second, maybe, you know, the title of the manga is We Never Learn. It makes sense for Rizu and for Mino, but maybe that's the thing that Yuga has to get. He's like, we never learn. You never get, like, a freaking message. And wasn't... Here's the thing that's weird, though. Wasn't it, like, the last chapter where Takemoto and Rizu, she just, like, gropes her out of nowhere, like, grabs her boob? Yeah, and so... It happened again in this chapter, but they're way more freaked out by it, so it was something else, probably. I don't know what that implied. Like, they were, yeah.
Maybe they ended up grabbing each other. I don't know. It seems, because, I don't know, it's hard to tell. I think that it is meant to be that he was looking around for a lighter, and he ended up grabbing onto them, but
yeah.
I don't know how the fuck you can possibly be that ignorant to not realize it. But oh well. This was a pretty enjoyable chapter, though.
Wait, hold on a second. Was it Yuiga that accidentally groped them?
That's, I think, what the implication's supposed to be.
Oh, okay, I thought the implication was they groped each other by accident.
I considered that as a possibility.
Huh.
That would make more sense for why he didn't know what was going on.
We need to do a poll on this. We need to figure out, you know, who groped who. This is something that needs to
be. Who is the phantom groper? Leave a comment below.
But yeah, it is making more sense that because Yuiga was completely oblivious, though, so I'm like, no, that couldn't be it, because he's not that stupid, is he?
He certainly didn't seem to know why the hell Iruka was grabbing him, so...
I'm looking for a small plastic lighter. Oh, I touched something very soft and squishy. Oh, that must have just been something else. Oh, there's the lighter. Oh, whatever. All right. Want to move on to the next? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm good. I was just trying to see if the message was important, and I don't even fucking know who it is. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was going to ask if that was, like, work or something. Yeah, you should probably take that.
I mean, just in case. But anyway.
Okay.
Actually, you know what? I'm going to take a closer listen. Can you start off on The Promised Neverlands?
Actually, you know what? I love The Promised Neverland.
All right.
Okay, you can do that. All right, I'm taking the reins here. Okay, well, hey, everybody. Welcome to Tekken 101 Reviews The Promised Neverland. So, I get asked a lot about this series. I'm just going to pull it up here just so I have it for reference. But I get asked a lot, like, do you read The Promised Neverland? It's really good. And I haven't gotten to reviewing it yet simply because I usually wait until we're about 50 chapters in and we're nearing the end of the Escape from the Grace Fieldhouse arc here now. So I feel like I might actually start covering this semi-regularly. But anyway, so this will be chapter 36 here, which continues the escape from the Grace Fieldhouse from Plantation 3. And are you back, Nick?
I think a guy just tried to get me to come have sex with him.
Okay, buddy. Well, if you want to get off, I can take the reins for this. I'm not going to try to cockblock
you. This random guy is just like, hey, I'm just partying here. There's a girl who loved to get together with a married couple.
Okay, so if it's a wrong number, I would just I would go around play with it. That's what I usually do when I get wrong numbers. I just like, oh, this is a unintentional hilarity here that could ensue. But no, I just
just take the Yuga approach. What does that mean?
What does that mean? You're like, I want to have sex with you. I don't get it. What? you're turning down sex for manga, freaking nerd. Okay, so I only got like the first like page into it, so you know we can just start from there. Chapter 36. I don't know what it's called though, because it's not
action.
Telling me the
part 5.
Oh yeah, execution. Yes, part 5. So I'll just finish up what I was saying there and we can get into it. So we have the kids all running along the side of the wall. They're trying to escape from the plantation here. The alarm has been sounded. All the daemons are getting ready to go and make their move. Of course, they're going to be moving toward the one way that they think is out of the plantation, and that's the main bridge. So it's kind of like a big, intense moment, like, oh shit, how are the kids going to... This turns into a really different kind of manga here all of a sudden, because we went for like so long with just like, okay, we just got to figure out how to outsmart, very methodical, but really still grounded in reality. And then all of a sudden, it's just like,
right.
Holy shit.
There are demons.
There are demons trying to kill us. There are supernatural beings that can kill us, and we cannot fight them because we are children and we will die. So we need to figure out some way around it. So here it goes. The final game of tag begins.
Right. So, we've got the kids running along the frickin' wall, and Emma says, all right, we're not actually going to the bridge. And Ray's like, yeah, because Ray says, hey, the alarm sounds, they're going to cut us off at the bridge. And Emma's like, yeah, that's why we're not going there. We're going to cross over to the other side of this pit. And Ray's like, are you serious? but we get this narration that explains from Emma's perspective, okay, everyone would think that the only way you could escape would be via the bridge, not the cliff. It's just impossible. Mom and the demons think only the bridge is a possible escape. So that's why we'll escape over the cliff. And this is established in Norman's note, his plan, because Norman's thought of fucking everything in this note that he's left for her. So he says, okay, if you have 2 months to prepare, if you get all the supplies ready, you can do it. And we see that Dawn has prepared a grappling hook, a rudimentary grappling hook, and using, I guess, still bed sheets and rocks.
Yeah.
And he manages to do it. He manages to get a good grip on one of the branches on the other side of the cliff.
Batman's the shit out of that.
Yeah, he gets specifically a coat hanger and uses that as a zip line across the rope that he has set up.
Which, once again, rather clever.
Yeah.
Yeah, rather clever. I mean, if it's a wooden, that would probably hold a child. Just don't look down. And Norman even left in that note. He was just like, they're all of the distances between the wall and the cliff, that's not constant. They're not all specific. There are certain areas that aren't super safe, but are closer than the other ones.
Because it's a wall on one side, but it's just a natural cliff on the other.
So. Exactly. So they couldn't have set that up there. So they get the Zipdyne ready. And I mean, I'll be honest with you, Nick. This chapter really got my heart pounding. Like, I was watching, like, the final scene in, like, a movie or something.
It's
like,
a really exciting
Manga doesn't usually do that. Yeah, because it's just like, oh, shit, are they gonna make it? Oh, shit.
The one part of it that really stands out to me, because they've got the grappling line going, and then these two kids are just like, and the other ropes will be sent over with bottle rockets.
Hey, you know what? Whatever works. I mean, I would question they might not be powerful enough to carry that heavy of a, like, that long of a length of rope, but hey, I mean, use enough, you know, whatever. Okay, sure.
There's also an awkward moment, because this one kid who looks like he's Kid Aoyama from how much he's sparkly. He's like, I'm going to go zipline across.
Yeah, I'm the cool kid. I ain't afraid of
See you
nothing.
Later, Ray.
He's got the constant twinkle right next to his eye. Hey, get used to them, because these might be like the new supporting characters coming up here in the next arc.
I'm sure we're going to have to get used to, especially those four kids that got focus as being the first ones that Emma talked to.
At least we got rid of Phil, that freaking kid. Phil.
I don't know. Have you heard our joke about Ray?
What is the joke about Ray?
Ray's our thing for Ray, which we started doing in a weekly manga recap. Lives is he talks like this, and he's totally got everything figured out. You know, like
he's like if you guys
had your baby memory still, then you would understand that going vegan is the right way to go. It's better for you overall, and you know, just makes you just like generally a better person. Unless you style your hair like this, with a whole bunch of it over your eyes, and
so he talks like a valley girl from the mid-90s. Okay,
but a holier than thou, like
holier than thou, like yeah, I can kind of see that, yeah.
So yeah. Ray is freaked out over this because it's one thing that they have this whole plan in place, but he's really taken in by the fact that all the kids are so brave in the face of all of this.
And that's that thing, like you said, the holier than thou, he didn't really ever consider that these little kids would be able to be of any help at all. They'd just be a detriment to them.
This entire time he thought, we're going to have to leave these kids behind. Only Don and Gilda could possibly keep up with the three of us. And they're getting stuff going. They're all just waiting their turn, getting themselves set.
Then Norman comes back to life. Sure, totally.
And, you know, not just the fact that they're being brave in this one moment, but he realizes, wow, for the past 2 months, these kids have been preparing and all for this moment. And, yeah, just as Emma had hallucinated Norman a little bit before, Ray has the same hallucination. Apparently, cutting your ear off has a very specific hallucinatory effect.
Dude, I saw a thing that people are just calling Norman has Jedi ghost powers. And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, let's go with that. He's like, I will guide you, my friends. I am one with the Force now.
Ray looks over at Hallucination Norman, and he's like, oh, you're looking so smug right now. And Norman's like, well, yeah, because we got to fool you. Don't you mock me. You're on my head anyway. So, Norman's like, hey, this is great, right? You know, we wouldn't be able to see this under normal circumstances, and this is what we thought could never happen. And it's all because it's Emma. Everyone joined fully believing in her. She's reckless and unreasonable, but she's straightforward and can say with everyone without wavering. So isn't this cool? And this honestly, because I'll go ahead and say, because Chris told me that, or rather he put up on the WMR Twitter that this was his chapter of the week, and Ray was his character for the week. And I definitely see that, because this is a big moment this is a big turning moment for Ray, where we see that, you know, he's not this pseudo-antagonistic force anymore. Now he's going to be properly on board with the group effort, because he's seen the light and stuff. This is a very big, important moment for him. But this moment also really drives home, this is why Emma is the protagonist of this story. We've had a few moments like this, but this is Ray kind of realizing this is why Emma
She's the leader. Yeah, she's the leader, and she's the one why people are following her. Yeah.
And But the other big important moment coming from all of this is, you know, Ray now realizes through Norman telling him, you don't have to give up. So you don't have to try. This is him realizing there is a way for me to resist Mom without having to die at the end of all of this.
Yeah, because you figure for the past 2 months, while Emma and all the other kids have been preparing for this, Ray has been basically just resigned himself to fate and just like, I'm going to die. And so, they established
when he revealed his plan to Emma that he had actually been planning the suicide to draw her away for like 6 years.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
So this is an even bigger turning point for him. Like literally for longer than we've known him, that was what he had been planning to do. And now he realizes, hey, there's another way I can do this.
Yep.
So we cut over to Isabella for a bit and she's like, how have those kids not shown up at the bridge yet?
Yeah. Something's up.
And so she's like, hey, maybe they could have climbed down into a different plant to hide or no.
Oh,
no shit. Way!
No fucking way they thought of that.
So,
and that woman can move because she
gets going.
though, to be fair, the way that layout was on Norman, the place where they're crossing is like the wall, like right to the like the plantation over, like three or two. I mean, four or two. The one directly to the next of plantation three. So it's not like on the other side of the walls or anything like that. So
she doesn't have to go. She doesn't have to go straight from. I don't think that she ever actually left section plant three though, because she's still on her radio.
No. Yeah. Well, it's a portable radio. I knocked my mic over there, but it's a portable radio. But I don't know if she left plant three. I don't think she.
I'm not really sure. They're continuing to the effort to move people along, but suddenly one of the kids, Gemma, freaks out. She's like, she's shaking all over, and she's like, oh, you know, it's so scary. What if I fall? And when she freaks out, some of the other kids are like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And Emma's like, oh, no, this is bad. But immediately Ray just scoops her up, and he's like, hey, it's okay. We'll go across together. You know, tie her around my waist. I'll carry her across, and we'll go like that. It'll be fine. And he also stops to assure the last two kids, aside from her and Emma, say, hey, are you two going to be all right, you know, going across yourself? And they're like, yeah, we'll be fine.
We got this.
He goes across the line, and it's like, oh, wow, Ray did a friendly thing.
I think this is really going to be a turning point for Ray's character, like you said. And moving forward from here, yeah, he's not going to have the same kind of attitude he had up until this point.
And there's a big speech that he gives in an internal monologue. It's like, you know, a destiny that couldn't be changed no matter how much I cursed it. My lonely battle, not being able to reveal the truth or save the others. If you can't do something, you have to give up. Wishing for more could cost you everything. I was scared, frantically just trying to stay in the moment. I wanted to chase an ideal, but I couldn't. But now, am I allowed to chase it? Am I allowed to wish that no one will die for a future that is like a dream? Thanks. I understand now. You got me, Norman. I can die later.
Da-na-na.
And we see that... It's
Emma, who's the last one on the wall, and that's the kind of heart-beating moment that's like, oh shit, shit. And
there's a moment because Emma is standing up there with the last two kids, and you see Isabella is now on top of the wall. She's racing towards them. And there was definitely a moment where I was afraid because you see all the kids on the other side, and then Emma looking behind her as Isabella's approaching, and because of the way that it's drawn, you think, no, is Emma going to be stuck there by herself at the last, because she caught them at the last minute.
Yeah.
But it's, of course, just a trick of the art and the sequential art. And the kids are gone and escaping into the woods. Their lines, and they've cut the lines behind them so they can't be easily pursued. And Emma just catches a glimpse of Isabella on the top of the wall as they fade into the darkness. It's a really good chapter. Big character moment. It's action-packed, surprisingly for this kind of a story. And it's, really intense. So, really good stuff. I love this series, and I'm really, really, really excited because they're outside the compound now.
They're outside
anything
the
can happen.
Freaking house! Oh, man. I mean, this is what it's kind of been building to the whole time.
Yeah.
I mean,
I didn't think that it would happen actually this soon, but, you know, with the glimpses that we've gotten, these hints of more that could occur in the future now, it's like, hey, there's a world of possibilities out there.
And I haven't really been that pumped for a chapter in a long time. But, I mean, this is probably the most pumped chapter for Promised Neverland I've ever had, really. But yeah, I have no idea what's going to go on here next chapter, if it's going to be like focusing mostly on the demons trying to figure stuff out, or if we're just going to cut right to them in the woods trying to figure out where they're going. Because you figure you got the bridge leading to the way out. That's the main way. So you'd figure they would still have like areas around the immediate plantation, you know, like, I don't know.
Yeah. So, okay. We're going to do the Seven Deadly Sins, which I'll mostly be handling then.
Yeah, you take the reins on that one.
So, King has gotten out of the illusion still. Diane is still inside of the body of Droll in the flashback dream thing. And so she is squaring off against Meliodas' brother, Zeldris. And Zeldris is confronting Diane and the two Gouthers, facing off, and Diane's like, okay, I'll buy time for you two to escape. So you go, I'll handle this. I'm the king of the giants now, so I can definitely do this. And so the Gouthers leave, and Diane goes into the Dance of Droll, using earth magic to summon a whole bunch of power. The land is ripping apart beneath their feet, and she's like, alright, let's have a match here. And Zeldris is just like, eh, I don't really want to be your enemy. And immediately just drop kicks into her chest, caves in her chest and knocks her to the ground, no problem at all. And Diane's like, are you kidding me? Because she has already squared off with one of the other Ten Commandments and completely shook off his attack with no problem, and Zeldris took her down with absolutely no problem, and so she tries to summon more magic to unleash her Gaia form, and she's like, I can't use my magic. What the hell?
Yeah.
And Zeldris is like, I'm Aizawa.
I've been hearing a lot of stuff about Meliodas' brother, and just like, oh my god, he's such an awesome character. You need to read just for him. I'm like, okay, I don't know.
He hasn't really gotten to do a whole lot yet.
I don't know. I started told someone telling me that, oh man, he's such a badass character. I'm like, okay.
And Zeldris says, I have been given magic from the Demon Lord to put to use. You could say I'm the Demon Lord's proxy. Now, I've read all 215 chapters of Seven Deadly Sins, and even I'm like, I don't know exactly what that involves, but okay.
I know there's a fairy king, so I guess there's a demon king too. I guess that would make sense.
So Zeldris says, you have a choice now, King of the Giants Droll. You will either die here, or you will join the Ten Commandments. And so outside of the dream, King is talking with the real Droll, and Droll is explaining what happened there. And he's like, so this is the choice that Diane has to make, the same way that King made his choice to spare life, and that was how he woke up and had passed the test. Now Diane is left with, now you will have to make a different choice for me. I chose to join the Ten Commandments. And, you know, it was... to run away from battle would have been an even greater disgrace. So those were the two options, join or die. But King is like, but you just told me that if you die in the dream, you die for real. Which means that even if she chooses the right choice, she can't wake up. But if she chooses the wrong choice, then she won't wake up.
Ah, okay.
So she's left in this catch-22, and Droll's just like, I just wanted to know which was the right move, to live as one of the Ten Commandments or die as a giant. And King is freaking out, like, Diane, no, don't do it, don't make the choice, no! And inside of the dream, Zeldris is bringing up Droll's past, and of course telling Diane things that she doesn't actually know about herself. You know, oh, you were peerless in strength, but also peerless in loneliness. You towered over the other giants, your skin a sapphire blue, your one eye hiding your magic. Like an unusual rock formation, you have four arms. I understand that even among your brethren, you were treated like an outcast. But that allows Diane to sympathize with Droll's situation because, as a child, she didn't like battling, she didn't fit in as a giant, and so she's like, oh, so Droll's kind of like me in that respect. And so Zoder says, you know, they would probably hold a festival for you these days, but you've never actually had a friend who understood you. But, hey, us demons, we get it. We're outcasts.
Yeah.
You'd fit in. So, join us. Death or the Ten Commandments. And so Diane has made up her mind. King is freaking out outside the dream. It's like, and going, don't do it, Diane! He's crying. And Diane immediately goes, I'm awake.
Yep. Yeah.
And King, of course, freaks out. His eyes bug out, and he's still crying there. And Diane's like, hey, I made it back. And Drill's like, impossible! What did you do? How'd you wake up? And Diane says, oh, I ran away.
Fate's fault.
You did
the impossible.
I feel like there's probably going to be a little bit of follow-up on this, because it seems like a very simple solution to the issue. But yeah. Diane is there, and hey, she was given her memories back by Gauther, so she grabs King and gives him a big old kiss, and that's where the chapter ends.
Yeah. I guess that's very significant.
Well, to give you Diane's had her memory erased multiple times. So multiple times she has forgotten the fact that she and King were in love. So
Because I know King had a thing for her, because I've seen like the first season of the anime, and it was like one of those things where she didn't like him back. I'm like, oh, okay, that's what their shtick is. But she was actually in love with him. Okay, that's interesting.
They had a past. Yeah. They had a past together that she didn't know about. So King was infatuated with her because he knew about the past and she didn't. She regained her memories at the end of the first arc, realized she was in love with King.
Okay.
But Gauther, who is a dick, erased her memories again. So she didn't remember
that. Gauther's the lust guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Wow.
He went through a lot of growth in this arc as well. But anyway.
I mean, it's only 216 chapters. I probably left out probably around whenever season one ended, so I could probably get caught up in a relatively short amount of time, I guess.
Yeah, and then, you know, you'll just shut up all the people who are telling you to read it, so...
there you go, that'll happen. Well, that'll never end. I keep getting recommendations for Jagan, or Jagan, or however you pronounce that. I get a lot of that, but, you know, whatever. But I guess the moral of the story is, you know, that's a good pickup line. You can go up to a girl and be like, hey, okay, you don't remember me, but we were madly in love at one point.
And I erased your memories in order to protect you.
Oh, okay.
Aren't you grateful towards me?
That would probably only work one out of every 100 times, but it might. It's like, you know.
Well, if you round up, I'm sure.
Yeah, okay. All right, what's next?
Black Clover.
Ah, yes.
All right.
A chapter that I was really pumped for because we get to see the king, and then I immediately...
What disappointment we have all experienced from this!
Now, granted, Nick, I have bought the first few volumes of Black Clover because I'm really into it, so I read the first few chapters all over again.
We'll have to have like you and Annalise be on it at the same time one of these times.
Does she not like it?
She loves Black Clover.
She and I clash
sometimes because I don't like big parts of it.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't a fan at the beginning, but that's, I'm not getting into that. But the basic thing is, the king was shown before this just in, like, silhouette. Like, he was behind, he was, like, with a bunch of harem of bitches behind, like, a cloth so you couldn't see him. And so I read that chapter recently, and then this chapter just came out, and I'm like, oh, that's rather convenient. We get to see him now. I thought he was going to be a rather good-looking, attractive fellow, you know. But anyway, let's...
That mustache. Oh, God.
He's a dick. He's a dick. He's like one of those kings, like, from, you know, that are just... Yeah, we'll get into it. Let's just get into it.
So, yes, the star ceremony thing where they announced how great Yuno and Asta have been doing has all wrapped up. The crowd is whipped up into a fervor. And the Wizard King says, now that the achievements have been announced, here's what you've all been waiting for, presenting the Royal King of the Clover Kingdom. And Oz is like, huh, what kind of guy is the king anyway? And, so the king comes out and is like, yes, now adore me, public, ooh.
Literally, the second I saw his face, didn't even need to say a word. I'm like, I know exactly who this guy is.
nobody with eyes like that could be a good person.
and really, I should have figured this. Because in a world of the Clover Kingdom where all the elites are all snooty, pompous assholes that are like, oh, you common plebs can't do anything to aid the fight because you're peasants. Like, if they had a king that was, like, pretty chill with the peasants and everything, that might change the attitude a little bit. So it just makes sense that the king would have the same attitude, you know?
And he's so obsessed with image. Donald fucking Trump over here. Going to the Wizard King and be like, don't stand directly beside me because you're overshadowed. And he's like, I am a Justice Kira Clover, the 13th king of the Clover Kingdom. And people are like,
great, awesome. Yeah. We know you.
And something that I only noticed this time around, his fucking face curls up the same way his mustache was. His lips curl up like...
Yeah, it does. Holy shit.
It's so gross.
Yeah.
And so immediately he's just like, go for me, war! It just immediately, like, a lukewarm but polite reception. He's like, I'm the king! I'm great! Look at this sublime aura! I'm so...
Yeah, he gets into it.
He's exuding his aura. Yes. I am greater than any was a king! Look about
you! Don't you understand I'm royalty? I'm better than you!
And immediately people were just like, I wish the Wizard King was king. It was like three different people in the crowd was like, I wish the Wizard King was king.
Why do we even need him?
And so the king's like, how dare you? Oh, and the Golden Dawn took first place again. I can't abide the color gold. Sidelined the brigades captained by royals. I don't like it. I do not like it one bit.
Which doesn't even really make any sense because you're the king. You'd think you'd be all about gold, you know? You think that would be your shtick.
I don't know. Let's see here. Maybe it has to do... Maybe he likes purple? Maybe he likes the purple orcas?
Yes, because if purple's regal by the orcas, but he doesn't really mention that.
Yeah.
He's just pissed at Julius because he's like, oh, you were hogging all the popularity for yourself. This is why they don't like me.
This chapter definitely made me feel less suspicious of William Vengeance, by the way.
Just like, maybe a little bit, yeah.
He's like, all right, anyone's got to put up with that kind of treatment. It's just like, I'm sure even if you are an evil douchebag that you've got your reasons.
Oh, man.
So,
but the king has a great idea, Nick, on how. Oh yes,
I'll get them on my side with this announcement. The High Dart of the Isle of Midnight Sun has been located, and until now we've been suited to many of their attacks, and they held the initiative in every battle. So this time we will attack them, attack on the enemy at last. So I shall form an even more elite group from the Magi Knights, forming the ultimate handpicked unit. They will be called the Royal Knights. And 1 week from now, a test will be held for all Magi Knights, and those who pass will be allowed to join the Royal Knights. And my Royal Knights will elite the Eye of the Midnight Sun!
And dude, I'm sure he sounds exactly like that, too. Like, to a T. But yeah. So that, I mean, it does help. It motivates the crowd, and he strikes this epic pose. He's doing the Clover Salute. He's just like, ha, fucking nailed it. Julius was the one that did all the work investigating, but of course I took the credit. And of course, because Asta's Asta...
He just jumps in with, why is the king doing the choosing? The ones who we think are awesome are the Wizard King and the Magic Knight Captains, not the king. And the king's like, and Asta starts chatting very obviously with Yuno about it. It's like, you know, I've never heard the king doing anything important. What about you, Yuno? No, me either.
Well, here's the thing. Like, historically... Yeah, I mean, the king doesn't usually, you know, ride into battle. I mean, some of them did, but not all of them. This is all Game of Thrones and shit. You know, so usually it's the king who sits in a castle and they're supposed to be protected. But the difference is, this is a world where people have incredible, crazy magic powers. So when you have the choice between, like, Julius, who has, like, time magic, pretty cool, compared to just some pompous asshole sitting on his freaking throne all day, you're gonna see a distinction there. Yeah.
And Asta just keeps on going on and on and on. He's just like, you know, he's got all that awesome mana, but you've never really done anything good for people. You know, I don't have magic, so I don't really know. But this king is like, I don't know. It's like he's got no aura. Or he seems kind of petty. And Inigo's like, come on, Asta, you should read the mood. This is no time to be telling the truth. Which is probably the greatest thing that Yuno has ever said, honestly.
Pretty much. And Yuno kind of agrees with him. He's just kind of like, yeah, you're right. When you put it that way, he does kind of.
So the king immediately just like, execute them! Execute that revolting pair immediately! Kill
off
them!
With their heads! Off with their heads!
And Asta's like, what? And Yuno's like, this is all your fault.
Great, Asta. Now we're gonna get guillotined. That's just great.
So the crowd's just kind of left to go,
Although you do see that guy, he appears throughout the story. The guy from, he's in the Mantis, and he's just like, idiot, he's gonna get killed.
So Julius dissolves the situation immediately. He's like, come on, calm down, your majesty. Please, pardon these two. They may become the shield that protects you someday. And if you recklessly brandish your power or something like that, you'll make the king's authority look cheap. And he's just like,
I'm the king, I'm supposed to, okay. Like, let's try not to kill the two people that are being honored for being, you know, helpful to the country. Screw that. They made fun of me. Kill them.
Wizard King, you know, turns things around, but he's just like, hey, you know, come on, you know, Royal Knights, I'm looking forward to this, you know. So Magic Knights, show us your courage. And we see an under of the captains are like, yeah, we're going to do this thing. I'm going to. And the deer guy is like, I'm going to make up for my dead last finish and stuff. And the king is still just like,
curse you all!
The Wizard King pulls aside Yuno and Asta, and he says, hey, you know, I know that you guys are going to be trying off the Royal Knights. You guys are great, but you're still rookies, and there are going to be a whole bunch of veterans who are going to be showing up for the selection test. So, don't get too full of yourselves as you're moving forward.
Exactly.
So, nice, cool little, like, hey, I like both you guys, so here's what you're in for, yeah. Kind of thing. It's gonna suck when it turns out he's a traitor. Like this.
Yeah, a little bit. It's also gonna suck the fact that they want to join those Royal Magic Knights and they just pissed off the king. So I mean, even don't know if that's gonna be an issue there.
Even if they end up joining, they might run into some problems.
Yeah.
And Asta's got a cool little thing because he's really excited about this. And he's like, hey, you know, if I'm gonna do this, I should figure out how to actually really draw out that power that I was using.
Yeah, the demon possession thing. Also, you have to think that the other members of the Royal Guard, I mean, provided that the Royal Guard, I still got bleach on my mind, the Royal Knights, aside from, you know, they would probably be as much of pompous assholes as, you know, a lot of the other people.
But they're heading down from the tower, and they hear someone shouting at Leo of the Crimson Lions, and he's like,
yeah.
Yes? And the new captain punches him in the face.
Freaking just pieces him right down.
Caves in his face. And she's just really upset that they're in, that their group is in fifth place. And she's yelling at them. Well, like, she's kind of going Super Saiyan. As she, kinda. Just her magic aura is surging around her, hair floating up. And she's...
You can just imagine that she's quite literally just on fire right now as she's doing this.
So, it looks as though we're going to get a bit of an introduction to the new captain of this. Which is, I think that's cool. I was talking to Chris.
So, what do you think? Like, Fuego's sister or something? Like, what do you think about this?
I would imagine that she is related to... Because she does look a lot like and Leo, so...
Yeah.
And she's also very comfortable with punching Leo in the face, so...
Yeah, probably his sister, maybe a cousin or something. I don't know. Something like that.
I was talking to Chris about this, I think, the last time, which is, you know, I like the approach that's being taken with the guilds, that we're being gradually introduced to them over the course of all this, and it's a very consistent kind of getting information and familiar with these characters in the organization. But that's the chapter. It was entertaining, but kind of disappointing at the same time, because, of you know, they played me, you know? You get that introduction to the king. He was in the shadows and such. Each time we've gotten even a glimpse of him, And then he comes out and he's just an asshole.
I think it's always because, like, through shonen, like, cliches and stuff, we expect, like, ooh, the shadowy character that we didn't know much about for 100 chapters is making an appearance, and then we expect him to be cool or have some cool power or something, and it's just, he's a freaking doofus. It's just, like, crap. But that's that.
Yep. So, well played to Yuki Debata. You got me, man.
Yeah, really, you got me too, totally. Apparently, next chapter, by the way, in the like the ending blurb, it's like, in the next chapter, the new captains of Crimson Lion's rage is over Asta, so they're probably going to do some argument there, so that would be interesting to see. All right, so what's next? Just One Piece, then?
Yep, we're going to wrap things up with One Piece.
All right, good, good.
They're holding a big character popularity poll for the 20th anniversary. You can go on Viz and vote for your favorite character, viz.com/op-poll.
Oh, seriously, I could... Oh, okay. Didn't know that. Thank you.
Anyone can do it.
Because so. I did the review, and I'm just like, I can't enter because I can't read Japanese. Anyway, moving on. But okay.
So it's chapter 863, The Honorable. We get a flashback to where Luffy was coming up with his mirror copy eating the cake plan. Because, remember... He told Beige that he really wanted to make a really awesome entrance.
Yeah.
And so he's like, hey, if you put the mirror inside of the wedding cake, we can bust through the cake straight from the mirror world. It'll be cool, funny, and sweet.
And Beige is kind of cool with this. Brulee is not so much.
Stop using my powers this way!
I told, like, she is going to screw something up. She's going to get to the point where, because they can't suppress her power like Sea Prism Stone or anything because they need it, but she's right. Like gonna just get to the point where she's like, I'm tired of taking orders from you can kill me at this point, I'm not fucking doing it, screw you. You know,
I mean, they've been getting along pretty well so far, so I don't know.
Well, you define this fairly well, because she still seems to be, you know, upset about it, I don't know. But anyway, Chopper brings up that on top of hiding in the mirrors, you know, she can also use that ability to change animals into like doppelgangers of Luffy. And so Luffy runs out really quick into the forest, captures a bunch of wild animals, and that brings us pretty much up to the present. And the two members of the Fire Tank Pirates that we saw hiding as chefs, those are the ones that actually implanted the mirror inside the cake there.
Yep. So we're all caught up to where we were at the end of the last chapter. The cake is just bursting apart. And remember, it's massively tall, so it's actually kind of falling over onto people.
It's just like falling down on everybody there. Yeah.
And Sanji has got pudding because they're both falling together from the top of it.
Yeah. We don't get to see her, like, if she's still, like, crazy, like, I don't understand what's going on here, but we don't really get to see her in the chapter, but, so Sanji saves her.
I'm sure that it'll be revisited later on. I like how you get the kind of face-to-face to start things off between Charlotte and Luffy. But it's one of the copies. It's not the real movie. It's just like,
it's like a crazy like cat or something. They're all just eating shit. I was worried that because there were so many Luffys that like so many of the Charlotte members were just like, we'd be seeing Luffy die so much in this chapter. Just like, oh, you're not him. Oh, you're not him. Like cracking their necks and stuff. A little bit too violent for One Piece. But they can't find out where the real one is. And Big Mom begins to do the same thing similar to what happened with when the picture is supposed to be broken. She clutches her head and begins to emanate. So I guess the picture, the cake isn't as valuable as the picture, but it's still very valuable to her. So she almost has a similar reaction to it.
Yeah, she starts to freak out over the cake being toppled, and she turns on a bunch of the chefs because they're like, you must bring me a new cake! And they're like, but...
We can't. It's not like the whole island's a cake or something. Where are we gonna find another cake?
Life or wedding cake? Choose now. And the newspaper guy is like, she's using our soul pocus. What a scoop!
Reminds me of that that freaking filler character from Toriko, Tina. You know, always running around with the photo. Remember her?
Yeah. I've never watched Toriko myself.
I never watched the anime. Well, that's nope. So anyway, I forget the character's name, but it's just Big Bird. And so, the words to the soul pocus is the thing where you like present like an ultimatum. And basically what it comes down to is, are you afraid of death? If you have any fear of death in your soul, then you will get your soul ripped out. And that's what she does with these chefs.
Yeah, she's just grabbing their souls up.
Yep.
Bye.
Dead. Well, we don't know if they're dead necessarily, but
right? Because nobody dies in One Piece, so
no one dies in the present storyline of One Piece. You go to flashback land and it's all bets are off,
right now. So we cut to inside the mirror world. People are gathering up. Oh, okay, we've sent out all of the fake Luffy's. Everyone's gone. Brûlé is just like,
why am I in this hell?
Some of the other Straw Hats head after as well. Jinbei and Pedro and Nami and Carrot and Chopper all go inside. So basically it's just Caesar Clown along with Brûlé inside the mirror world. Mm-hmm. Let's see here.
There's a kind of a funny moment with Caesar where they're all leaving and they're like, we're leaving the rest to you, Caesar. And he's like, you human scum. Is he really that bad? I think that's Carrot saying that. And, you know, they respond with, he's the worst. And you have this moment with Caesar. He's like, clutches his fist like, yeah, I am the worst. Yeah, I think he's like taking some pride in it a little bit.
I don't know. He looks kind of upset to me.
I don't know. Like, he's grimacing.
It's really,
it's a really difficult
to read expression.
It is. It really is. I could take it either way.
So, of course, Charlotte turns her attention to the various Luffy's, and she's like, which one's the Straw Hat? Which one is Straw Hat Luffy? How dare you in my way? And Capone is like, uh-huh, it's a diversion. Does she really think she's going to get an answer? And of course, he's not going to come straight for her. And Luffy's just like, it's me!
It's me! And then Capone's face. From Paige. Not as crazy as Jinbei's face fault when he did that, but it's pretty close. It's just like a jaw drop. Just,
Oh, man. And Luffy spots the picture frame that they're heading after. Capone quickly signals over to his men who have got their launchers ready. Yeah. And then we go over to where Chopper and Carrot and Nami are hiding. They're still inside part of the cake. And now he's like, okay, once Luffy breaks the picture, we'll jump out 3 seconds later. So let's do this. And let's be serious about this. And Carrot and Chopper are stuffing their face with cake.
I mean, come on, Nami. We're in a giant wedding cake. What do you expect here?
Big Mom summons Zeus and Prometheus to go after Luffy. But what's his name? Whose name I keep forgetting. The awesome guy.
Dogtooth or Katakuri is the two different translations I've heard of that, yeah.
Reveals that he has a devil fruit, which is not nearly as impressive as his absurd observation hockey.
Indeed. But
it's still pretty good.
Yeah, it's still a Logia. It's the Mochi Mochi Nomi, mm-hmm. which mochi being like a rice pastry in Japan. But I've also read the way that it's interpreted is anything that is just generically sticky is referred to as mochi. So basically think of it like he has like a chewing gum kind of fruit, kind of.
Yes.
And then so he, you know, kicked using this fruit, coated his leg and armament hockey, slams into Luffy, causes damage, but also gets him stuck in his leg so he can't get out.
So Luffy is stuck there. And Katakuri is like, okay, you know, this is the real one, Mama. You know, the rest of them are just animals from the island, altered by Brûlé's powers. You can ignore them, using his haki to just tell all this stuff. Luffy can't get free. And Big Mom is just like, hey, come on, do you think you're helping here? You don't get to call the shots. And Katakuri says, listen, Mama, he's going after Mother Carmel's picture.
Oh, is he now? You know, that kind of look on her face. You give her the nasally expression. I kind of give her like a redneck woman kind of thing. I don't know. Like, because I think just big fat, like Honey Boo Boo's mom, you know, like big fat woman in a muumuu, you know?
I can see that, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
Make me a wedding cake or die!
Exactly. That's just fun. Man. So
Capone is freaking out now because, oh shit, what are we going to do? And Pedro is like, what are we gonna do? But Jinbei says, I've got this! And he uses his ability, T-Current Shoulder Throw. And Kakuri's like, don't explain my powers to them.
Stop it,
because he knows he's gonna explain his powers to them. this is a cool little thing that I think
because Katakuri's a little bit too cool for, like, I will explain to you exactly how my powers work. So that's what you have Jinbei for.
Right.
And I was questioning at first, where did Jinbei get the water for that attack? But then it's actually, like, the translation is Kairyu, which is black tea, so he's usually, like, actual tea for that technique. So it's like crackers fruit. You get it wet, can't work, so he slams it into the mochi mochi fruit thing, and Luffy gets freed from that, and then Jinbei. I mean, people were honestly throwing it out like, oh, this is a Brook chapter for what we're going to find out at the end. Oh, it's all
not
about
really.
Brook. I'm like,
he gets a moment at the end.
He gets a moment at the end. All my fans like were like, oh, yeah, Brook 2017, year of Brook. And I'm like, really, guys? This is a Jinbei
it's
chapter.
A moment, but it's
through.
All
Come
about Jinbei.
It's and all Jinbei, about Jinbei.
Jinbei covers for them because, you know, the cat's not completely out of the bag yet. So he's like, okay, I told them about Mother Carmel's portrait. Okay.
Yeah.
It's so that way they take the suspicion off of Capone. He's like, you know, I've been involved in your operation, so of course I've heard the rumors. And so Big Mom's like, now you're rebelling from me for real, huh? And
Big Mom, she goes just a minor thing. She goes through so many weird changes. Like she's first like, oh my god, they're wrecking my cake. Oh my god, I'm pissed at Straw Hat. Well, Jinbei, you're leaving, are you? I'm like. Bipolar much or tripolar? I don't know.
And Big Bird newspaper guy's like, big news! Jinbei, the former Lord, is gonna join the Straw Hats! And because Jinbei flat out says, like, I'm gonna quit from your crew, Big Mom, and I'm gonna join the Straw Hats. And Big Mom's like, well, you can do what you want once you're gone, but not before you've paid the proper price! You don't want to live in shame, do you?
Dun-dun-dun!
And
I mean, to be fair, yeah, Jinbei's a pretty honorable dude. I think in this case, you can kind of just, like, push that aside, but okay, he's not just gonna, you know, leave.
And Jinbei says, if you promise not to harm anyone aside from me, I will offer you as much of my life as you can take. And Luffy's like, you can't join if you're dead, though, Jinbei!
I would love Brook to pop out, like, question mark.
What? Excuse me! So Big Mom's like, oh, I love this. You'd rather choose death than stay in a place you dislike? Well, you'll get no sympathy from me. All right, dummy, you've got a deal. Stay or life.
And then once again, she's doing the Target Eye Rinnegan shit there. I don't know
she's
what it was.
Looking really intimidating. Because Jinbei's a big guy, but she is just dwarfing him as she looms over him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Jinbei, though, I love this. You know, not a moment of hesitation. Just kind of squints his eyes at her like, life.
And
yeah, take it, bitch. Cards are on the table. Now what?
And Big Mom is kind of taken aback for a bit.
Yeah,
and she said, and so she's like, stay or life? And Jimmy's just staring up at her. And they're like,
I guess she's just trying to do it, but it just won't work.
They're like, wait a minute. His soul's not coming out. So he's not afraid of Mama? And Jimmy's like, a man who would be crewmate of the future King of the Pirates cannot afford to tremble in the presence of a mere emperor.
I mean, come on, that was so freaking
he's
cool.
He's so awesome.
Oh my god, he's so goddamn cool.
And then he's like, and if you will not take my life, then I return your ritual cup. As of this moment, I quit the Big Mom Pirates. I appreciate all you have done for me. And freaking Chopper is like in tears, like, that's so cool!
Oh, it's great. And then Mama, though, being the very well-to-do, I mean, of course she will listen to his wishes, she shatters the sake cup and just charges up Prometheus to just punch him right in the face. And we don't find out what happens from that, actually, so...
Nope. All we see is that someone who is clearly Luffy...
Yes, definitely. He's got his face, dude.
It's got his Luffy's face and hat. Yeah, yeah. It's Brook in disguise for some reason as Luffy. I guess that he could slip into the crowd of the animals?
Yeah, I think it's just the case of, he doesn't look a thing like Luffy. The height and everything's wrong, and it's clearly just like a plastic bag painted with Luffy's face he taped over his head. Like a $2 Halloween costume, but
like he looks
kind of
like a scarecrow. Yeah,
yeah, kind of. But with all the chaos going on, and there's like two dozen other Luffys, I think he would like just the color scheme. You get that right, you'll pretty much be able to fit in. Yeah.
And so he just takes a mallet and he smashes Mother Carmel's picture. Pfft, done. I love how he just kind of just like what. Done.
Yeah, he just peeks into the panel like yo ho ho, yo ho ho. And I have a theory that picture is actually going to be linked to Big Mom, like, in a way beyond just, like, being a sentimental picture. Like, the second that it's broken, she'll have the reaction to it. And that might cut off the attack, you know, because she's, like, charging up to punch Jinbei right in the face. So, that's just my take on it, anyway.
So. Awesome chapter.
I love this chapter. Jinbei's never been one of my favorite characters, but he gained some notches. He gained some points in this chapter. He really did. He had like one cool moment after another. It's like, stay or life, boom. And then he had, I'm going to be, you know, king of the pirates crew. I can't be afraid of a Yonko. Oh my God. And then he's like, he sits down in the middle of all this chaos and plays out a sake cup. Like, okay, man, that's,
wow. And he's so cordial about it too. It's like, so thank you for everything.
Like, you just got owned, Big Mom. You just got owned by a fish.
Oh, man.
So, all right.
Really happy with this. And that is going to bring our conversation to a close. So let's wrap up by naming our favorites. Series. I got Chris's series of the week and character of the week. Like I said before, he chose Rey and he chose The Promised Neverland. I should have probably told you about this beforehand. But,
no, I know. I heard about it. I keep forgetting every time I'm on. It's just I don't want to say it, but I have to say The Promised Neverland as my series. I got to. For the character is definitely Jinbei for all the reasons we just laid out. Character of the week. But I got to go Promised Neverland just because I'm so hyped. I'm genuinely so excited to see this chapter this week.
And I'm 100% there with you. I chose Jinbei and I chose Promised Neverland. I mean, like, Jinbei was really awesome and Promised Neverland was really awesome. So a couple of really good chapters from that. We didn't actually have the audience poll running in the chat like we normally do. I might try and put up like a straw poll and tweet that listeners so that we can actually
there's
get that down.
And but, I don't know if you use YouTube to upload your stuff. I know you upload it eventually, mm-hmm. but there's an option you can add polls to YouTube.
Oh, okay.
Very simple ones with the cards that they have.
Might look into that.
Yeah, it's pretty simple to use.
But that's it. That's going to do it for the show. So thank you, everyone, who joined us. Normally, we do a live recording on hitbox.tv/realty and twitch.tv/realty, but due to my own limitations, couldn't really do that this week. This will be uploaded as soon as I can figure out how to put it on all of the different ways we share it. I'll have to be talking to Chris about that. You can follow Chris at RoyalOT, and you can follow me at YRollerOfTime. You can follow the podcast at DMRPodcast. You can follow Matt, Teching101, at Teching101, as well as on his own YouTube channel.
Just type in Teching101 somewhere, you'll find me.
You'll find a bunch of different, because you're shared across like 50 different platforms or something like that.
I don't know, I just got to spread my bases out. But thanks, Nick, for having me on as a guest host.
Awesome.
Is Chris going to be back next week, or are you going to do a different host every week? Oh, okay, that'd be cool.
Right. We'll have you on again, I'm sure. So thank you
very much. Yes, it was a lot of fun.
And you can check out our show, weeklymongrecap.podbean.com, iTunes, subscribe, leave a comment and rating, send all sorts of feedback stuff to weeklymongrecap@yahoo.com. You can send in questions for us to answer in our next Q&A episode. You can send in suggestions for manga for us to take as a suggestion. Special thanks also go out to our Patreon supporters. Your support allows us to create bonus content for you guys to enjoy. I don't have ready the list of new supporters, but we'll make up to that when Chris is back next week. Also, Steve Manor, Talk Artist, and Infamous Planet, who does the frame for the show. Thanks to you guys. And we're done. So,
okay.
Normally when we end the show, we end on some bizarre kind of joke thing. I don't know how the hell Chris does this, because he always figures it out. And then he prompts me, and I'm like,
he had it ready to go?
No, he just comes up with something. Like, you know.
Oh, okay.
He's got some bizarre mind. And I'm always just like, why couldn't we just, like, end the recording when we said we were going to?
I had to ride on a saddle like a 5-year-old at a restaurant the other day because it was my birthday.
You had to?
That's something. We sit down. I went out with my mother. Of course, I told her not to tell them it's my birthday because I don't like the song and dance shit. She immediately blurts out it's my birthday. I turn to the waiter. I'm like, please do not sing. They didn't just sing to me. They did the thing they do for like little kids. It was like a Texas restaurant. They brought out a saddle and they made me sit on this shit. And they're like, howdy, partners. What's your name? Matt. How old are you? 24. And I went with it. I was like, yeehaw, yippee-ki-yay, all that shit. Because I just went along with it. But after I got done with it, I looked at my mom. I'm like, okay, here's what's going to happen. We're going to eat our food. We're going to get in our car. We get in my car, and we are never going to talk about this moment again.
And then you talked about it for hundreds of people to listen to.
You know what? Because I realized, I was pissed at the time, but after I realized, like, that is kind of a funny story. So there you go.
And that's it.
Okay.
I have no embarrassing stories to share.
Oh, there you go.
See you guys.